Live from the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok with your host, Serge Delpierre.
Thank you, Jim. Is there an expression for what Jim just did, Tim?
Tim's silent.
Anyway, welcome to Film Grok. This week we're going to be doing commentary on the second James Bond film, From Russia with Love.
Awesome.
And we have here, well, there's me here, and to my left we have
Tim McMillan.
And to his left,
Jim Usterman.
And staring at him from across the table, and to my right is
Michael Smith.
Our cue point for From Russia with Love is the, on the DVD, you should have this, the MGM logo comes up and then it fades out. So it's not after the second roar, like for Pink Oz, but just when the MGM logo fades out to black. So pause it there, and then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and we'll hit play, and then you can listen to this in sync with you watching the movie or doing something else.
Now, is this a particular version of the video that they need to know which version they get?
There's multiple transfers out there, but the cue point being at the end of the fade of the MGM logo should be the same.
Yeah, I don't think they would have the UA logos. I think since it's been on DVD, it's always been the MGM logo.
Good enough.
So that's good. Cool.
But this is the transfer that was taken from the master, the Lowry Digital restoration that was used for the Blu-ray master.
Right.
But this is the standard def we're watching.
But that's cool. I mean, I have the standard def one that came out, I think, like in 99 or 2000. Right. So this
is the remaster.
Excellent. Actually, From Russia with Love, speaking Blu-ray quality, is known as one of the finest Bond transfers out there, and yet it's one of the oldest titles. It's very rare, very odd that Dr. No and From Russia with Love are considered to be the two best Blu-ray transfers.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. Look at that.
Go figure. The way they were stored, whatever reason, lended themselves to be wonderful in the transfer.
Wow. Well, I'm glad this one came out. I'm curious about seeing Goldfinger now and seeing how that is.
It's a very good transfer. Lowry Digital does wonderful work.
Wow. Thank you, Lowry. When was the first time you saw this, Tim?
From Rush with Love?
Yes.
I have never seen it all the way through. I've seen parts of it.
That was music playing in my head.
What music?
The Zoinks music.
Oh, the Zoinks. I have not seen the continuity of the entire
dun,
film.
Dun, dun.
So today will be a foist.
Yeah, it's not copywritten.
So I'm looking forward to it.
That was an ad lib.
There you go.
So... well, that's interesting.
No, this will be interesting. Tim always has the most. You always have the most information. I really do. You have the most facts at hand. You have a mind like that. So this will be. I'm sure things will be springing to your mind as you're watching it. That'd
I hope
great.
So. Now that you build me like
or,
that,
or you'll turn into a zombie.
Yes, could very
won't
well
say
be.
A word.
Jim, you ever seen this film?
I've seen this film several times, and I love it.
Oh, good.
I'm a huge Bond fan, so
all right.
I'm very excited to see. I have not seen it in many years, however.
Do you remember the first time you saw it? Saw it?
The first time, actually...
In my favorite Mid-Atlantic accent. When did you saw it?
When you saw that
you saw
movie.
That?
You know what? I don't recall the first time.
Right.
I remember
come on,
my
you always
dad,
remember
my,
your first.
No, you know, I don't. I was drunk. Oh, what are we talking about?
The film.
Oh, the film. No, I think I saw it with my father, and
that was your first time.
That was my first time. Yeah, with my
good
dad.
Thing you were drunk.
My dad and a priest. Father O'Malley.
Your dad was the priest?
What? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
I do
wow.
not recall to answer your question, Your Honor. I do not recall.
Wow. And we're talking about Bond, right?
I do not recall, Your Honor.
Oh boy.
Mr. Smith, follow that one up.
Right.
And that's not his real name, by the way.
Right around the age of 12 or 13, I saw, I think, For Your Eyes Only, and then I followed up by, I think, watching every single Bond film I could get my hands on. My father had a pretty good collection on, probably on Betamax, of all things.
Oh, Betamax.
Yeah.
Betamax gets a big round of applause.
Exactly. And I just watched one after another, and I just saw them all within like a year or two, and just was a huge fan.
My experience is a little similar. I think I talked about it when we did Dr. No. When I was I grew up in Quebec, and the James Bond films were, for the most part, up until I think Diamonds Are Forever, were 14 and over. And so there was like no seeing any James Bond films because I wasn't 14 yet. But I think they were playing back then, of course, before VCRs and everything. The films played in second run, and there was a theater running James Bond films for like, you know, 4 or 5 weekends in a row, starting with Dr. No from Russia with Love, and then the next week Goldfinger, Thunderball, the next week whatever it was.
Awesome.
Thunderball.
Now, who'd you go with?
You Only Live Twice, and my father. But I wasn't 14 years old, and they were still rated for 14 or I think I was 13. And so we go, and Dad says, come on, we're going to go. And so we go down there, and he says, two, and the man looks at me, and looks at me. My dad says, is he 14? My father says, my son is 14 years old. He says, fine, go on in. So,
do you have a brother who was 14?
Do I have a brother who was 14?
Well, I mean, you seem like your father was trying to get away with something by saying, my son is 14.
My son is 14, because he wanted me to see, he thought this is ridiculous. My son is seeing this film because I say he can see this film. So, yes. I thought that was cool. Well, of course,
it was your rite of passage.
Yeah, that's an awesome memory.
It was my rite of passage. So basically what we did is, and these were on successive weekends, so basically the first weekend we saw Dr. No from Russia with Love, and then so it was like for 3-4 weekends up until we got to, I think whatever the last ones, and I'd seen already, and my first Bond film ever was Diamonds Are Forever, and I'd seen that, and I think I'd seen Live and Let Die already because that had come out, and then that's when this took place. So I don't know what theater it is, and you know,
but what an awesome memory with your father.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Mine is similar.
And then we went to Hungarian food,
which just makes it even more awesome.
Yes, stuffed green peppers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Love those.
Yes.
It used to be a great Hungarian place on Ventura. It's not there anymore. But my father, same kind of thing. He used to watch Star Trek with me, and we saw the Bond movies together, and those are wonderful memories. I don't remember the order like you do.
Right.
But
I just remember because distinctly it was like that.
Well, I think the Bond franchise lends itself to father-son bonding, so to speak.
It does, actually.
Pun intended.
And my parents would definitely, oh, there's a new Bond film, let's go see it. So I think here's like, yes, let's go see this. So, and actually with Star Trek was my mom. My dad wasn't a Star Trek, my mom was.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
So I used to watch Star Trek as a child with my mom in black and white.
And now, not to get personal, but your parents are still around?
Yeah.
And that's so cool.
And hopefully they'll listen to this at some point.
Well, and hopefully they won't be mad that you didn't tell me they were around before, but I think that's awesome that you have those memories. My mother was not particularly interested in seeing Star Trek or, the video things, but my dad and I, that was kind of something special he and I had.
Right.
Unlike, because I do have brothers and sisters, I don't think that they had that same bond with him.
Okay. Are you the oldest?
I am the oldest.
Okay, I'm the oldest, too, yeah. So I think that makes a difference, because then you do certain things.
Yeah. Yeah,
with your parents,
it's
just kind of like you're the first, oh, hey, we can do this with the son. Yes, let's go do this kind of thing. And on that note, I think it's time to start the movie. So I have in my hand, actually, I'm pointing to the Film Grok projectionist up in the Film Grok film booth.
Bubba.
Bubba. Hey, Bubba, how's it going? And he's saying he's ready to go. Okay, so on my count, 3, 2, 1, play.
Bubba's a good man.
Yes, he is.
He makes his own hooch up there, by the way.
I've never had that hooch. Now here, actually, this is in Dr. No, that wasn't Sean Connery doing that intro, but now they put Sean Connery in there.
Hmm.
And this is supposed to be, I guess, a scope.
Did they have a pre-title sequence in Dr. No? Or is this the first time they use a pre-title sequence, this opening, in From Russia with Love? I think this is the first time they have before the title.
This is a little unique because if you think about it, now we've seen one Bond film and now we see Bond again, but we all know what happens. We're foreshadowing James Bond will die. That is what they're doing. They're telegraphing from the beginning. James Bond will die in this film. I mean, we think that he dies, in terms of your writing, which is good, which of course never happens again. Then it just becomes introductions to what James Bond is able to do.
You Only Live Twice. He's making love to that girl, and the guys come in and machine gun the bed.
Yeah, the bed.
It's up in the wall.
But he knew that that was his last film, too.
But I mean, as far as the psych to the audience, he's dead.
Right.
They do that, and then they throw his body in the ocean.
Well, I think
then he comes out with his scuba gear, and you find out he's alive.
Right. Definitely in terms of the moment to moment there. But I think in terms of foreshadowing that James Bond would die, this was the second film. And who knew what was going to happen now? James Bond could die for all we know, though we know that the hero likely won't die.
Right. In context, the audience was put off their game by it a little bit.
I mean, here you imagine, all you've seen is Dr. No. This is the first sequel in the series. Mm-hmm. There are no others. I also like how Sean Connery actually plays a guy impersonating him. Because if you look at it, he's not Bond. He's just kind of a little on the meekish, tentative side. Nervous.
This is a beautiful sequence.
Oh, it's really well. I mean, really well lit.
And right into the story. Ted Moore, I mean, this is really a hook.
Ted Moore.
Yep.
And he has to pull that string to what? Get the watch to talk.
Once again, it's foreshadowing for the end when he tries to, of course, kill Bond later on. So we know exactly how he's going to do it.
Guess we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yep, Robert Shaw.
So now you're watching this, and it's like
nice shot with the lights on the back.
I know, and James. What? Yeah, exactly.
Change good focus shift.
Change in exposure. Beautiful. Exposure shift. Either that, or they pumped a lot of light there in front. So here you're expecting basically.
And the audience is saying, well, the movie's over. Bond's dead.
Bond's dead.
And we just are 2 minutes into it.
Oh, that
guy. Isn't he the Russian guy?
He was in lots of other ones, yeah.
Isn't he the Russian leader in the other film?
He's in one of the much later films. Like
Spy Who Loved Me, I thought.
Spy Who Loved Me or Octopussy or something like that. Yeah, he showed up much later.
Multiple times.
Yeah. Oh, so now we know Bond is not dead. See, that's all it is.
And then right into the...
And then we go into the titles.
This is...
And the music. Oh,
wonderful opening sequence.
All these opening
Is this the first time we had Maurice Binder titles?
Did he do Dr. No?
You know, why am I blanking on this?
I'm blanking as well, but this is a very low-budget way to do it. Just have a slide projector.
Projection, yeah.
On Naked Women, yes.
But it works.
What are those? Double O. I couldn't tell. I couldn't read it.
Those are tassels.
And this is an instrumental, which didn't happen often as far as music on a title sequence from this point on. It was in this one and on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I think there were only two.
But Dr. No, if we look at it sequentially from the series, and Dr. No was the same thing. We just had the James Bond theme. Actually, we didn't even... I don't even remember the opening sequence. But there was no Dr. No theme song either.
But Dr. No had the Calypso song being sung. Wasn't that over the Three Blind Mice and the title sequence? So that was Dr. No. And then so it had words, but it wasn't a Bond song. From Russia with Love, an instrumental. The only other instrumental would be on Her Majesty's Secret Service in 69.
Well, was it probably Goldfinger really set the standard for the opening song?
The song.
Yeah. After that, they kind of probably had to keep that going.
To form. It became the form, the pattern.
Yeah, their formula was, and it's fantastic.
And Peter Hunt's the editor, and Peter Hunt went on to direct on Her Majesty's Secret Service, but he edited a few. Very good editor. And Lionel Bart is credited with composing this theme from Rush with Love. So it's the first John Barry score that he did all the score except for the main title, and after that he did the entire score, including the main title from Goldfinger on with his chunk of films. But Lionel Bart is the famous Broadway music composer for Oliver, and he's the one who wrote this. And then this the James Bond theme, Monty Norman, which was held over from Dr. No.
Title song right there. And John Barry.
John Barry did the score for the rest of the film.
You know, I think I don't actually recall seeing him projecting it on the women other than this.
Right. As far as directly on them, no.
Yeah,
I
mean,
think.
They did that effect, but...
They did like superimposing on figures of women and stuff. But as far as an actual slide being projected on them, this is it.
It's actually kind of a kind
and
of
Terrence
a fun...
Young, the director, he's credited with being the most. He was Bond in real life. This guy was very classy and sophisticated and charming as hell. And he's the one who was the mentor to Sean Connery for the character.
Really?
Yeah, he's the one who educated Sean Connery on what it was to really be Bond, according to everything I've read. And Connery held him in high regard as an example.
And where did Terrence Young go?
He directed, I wish I knew his filmography. We'd have to look that up. British director, I believe.
Here, I can actually do that right now.
Terrence Young did a few, at least two Bonds that I know, I think. And I believe I read this set was $150,000. That's a mat for the ceiling, but everything below that is a real set.
Wow. That's nicely done.
Nice mat.
Everything I've read is that From Russia with Love really holds to the novel feel of Ian Fleming for Bond. The feel of this movie is very much in the flavor of how Ian Fleming wrote the stories. the other movies went off and became a little cartoonish and built up, pumped up the gadgets, pumped up the women, the you know, stuff. But From Rush with Love, writing-wise and storyline, really is the feel of a Bond novel.
Now, we had previously discussed that this is the first Bond movie that introduces the gadgets, speaking of gadgets.
Right.
So, I guess, and that also became part of the formula that they used.
Right, and then, of course, took off, and they just, yeah, like, you know, like a rocket, and they said, more gadgets, more is better, and then it became up to Moonraker, just total gadgets.
Well, yeah. Moonraker was, so. That is the silliest Bond movie.
I love Moonraker. I don't know.
I enjoyed the movie, although Jaws kind of
right.
Me.
As far as the storyline, I understand it went into cartoon camp land.
Yeah.
But from a production standpoint, Moonraker is so freaking well made.
This is interesting, the number of men who have sunglasses on. I'm not really sure why that would be. Apparently, they're all vampires. You know, John Barry's music is so awesome in these. I mean, just that little sort of...
Yeah, the sound of his strings is very identifiable. He always had a mammoth string section. That's the John Barry sound.
Mm.
Thick strings.
I think those Fisher are meant to be symbolic.
Right. And this is known as number one, correct? But he's actually Blofeld. This villain, right, Serge?
Is this Blofeld?
He is. Yeah, oh yes, he is Blofeld. I'm trying to remember what it was. I think they were just not identifying him yet. I think the problems with...
So he's known as number one in this film.
I think so. And then...
So the introduction of the cat is here, and the introduction right. of Blofeld.
Blofeld really comes to the fore more starting in Thunderball, and then definitely he's actually on screen for...
You only live twice. Donald Pleasance.
And on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Telly Savalas.
He is the villain. And then, of course, in Diamonds Are Forever, he plays there, and then basically he's...
I forget the name of the actor who played in Diamonds Are
Charles Gray.
Okay.
Several times.
How many of the films is Spectre the nemesis? Or the...
That's a good question.
Think they stopped once Sean Connery was out, and then actually... In one of the Roger Moore ones, they actually have a part where he's in a helicopter or something, and he
picks him up in the helicopter.
Was that for
Your Eyes Only?
I think it was for Your Eyes Only. Yeah, that's right. And it was because of the whole Kevin McClory thing with the lawsuit, and I think apparently they just wanted to be done with it because that was tying up the character Blofeld. They wanted to bring him back. They couldn't, so he just picked him up, dumped him in the smokestack. He's dead.
That's right.
He's done.
That's how the movie opens.
We're
right?
moving on. That's right. Blofeld is gone.
Which really is... Yeah, it holds over for his revenge for his wife's death. Because they show him at the headstone of the wife, right?
Oh, I had forgotten completely.
Right.
Diana Riggs' character at the beginning.
I'd forgotten it completely about it. Because what Diamonds Are Forever, that's the whole thing. At the beginning, you know, it's a whole matter of where's Blofeld. And he keeps on trying to kill Blofeld. Right. He keeps on killing Blofeld's imposters.
But
I think he kills one of them.
His wife, Tracy, which was played by Diana Rigg and Her Majesty's Secret Service, they tie that into For Your Eyes Only, where he's at the headstone. At some point, and then he gets revenge on Blofeld and throws him down the smokestack.
Yeah,
if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and actually, the whole thing is, that, of course, the sequence from the books is completely different,
right?
Because On Her Majesty's Secret Service came somewhere else. I don't remember.
In this film, From Russia with Love, I've always read From Russia with Love was John F. Kennedy's favorite Bond novel, and he's a big fan. And From Russia with Love was the last movie that John F. Kennedy ever saw. Wow. It was. They showed it in the White House right before he went to Texas.
Well, that's freaky. They just mentioned Dr. No here and how the whole thing about our operative Dr. No was killed by Bond. Actually, no, that's interesting. Look, the door that they have there is the same kind of door that M has in his office with the lights.
So, consensus, favorite Robert Shaw movie?
Jaws.
My
favorite role for Robert Shaw?
Well, I don't know. Right now, he's doing pretty well.
he's fantastic in this. He does look awesome, though. He really looks amazing in this.
Well, he did some many great roles. I remember him from Jaws, but that's just me.
I think his most identifiable role would be from Jaws, absolutely.
Absolutely. Certainly the most iconic.
Right. But he was a writer, too.
Oh, look, they're just waiting there for the chopper. That's because radar told them that there was incoming.
Radar.
It just looks like that kind of chopper with the bubble front.
I like how it's called Spectre Island. Spectre has.
I want to go to Spectre Island. Island.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to go to Spectre Island. Like, kill your ass.
Well, not anymore. It's still called that, but there's no more Spectre there.
Oh, there we go. Now we get our exposition. This is who he is.
And so, Lata Lenya, is that what it's pronounced? Lenya?
Lata Lenya.
Lata Lenya. Stage actress.
Yes. Worked with Bertolt Brecht. Was in Three Penny Opera. In fact, if you listen to the song, Mac the Knife.
Her name's in the lyrics.
That's right. Well, at least in the Bobby Darin version, not in the play version. But that's why.
Her name sounds like a Bond name.
She played Pirate Jenny.
Well, there you go.
Well, there you go.
I love all the training scenes.
You know, this is interesting because this is a flip. This is complete, like, the inverse of what you have with, what was it, M5, M6? What's Bond's organization name?
MI5. MI6.
So basically, they're doing the same thing.
Right. It's their R&D.
But these guys are evil.
Right.
So well, we've seen this. This scene comes up, you know, like in Return of the, or so of the Dragon.
So we need the antithesis of Q to be here, basically.
Well, that's basically it. We're seeing...
To see the guy that is the overlord of their
essentially,
R&D.
They're setting up that Donald Grant is the antithesis of Bond. He is his other. And actually, they kind of did that in the beginning sequence, too, by having the whole operation. They have everything. And so only he, being like Bond, can kill Bond. Because Bond is their greatest enemy.
Jeez, he looks 10 feet tall.
Well, she's pretty short, too.
Yeah.
I like the brass knuckles.
Well, you got to test him. That's like her one test.
Yeah, that's it. It's like kicking the tires.
Yeah, exactly.
She couldn't try and kick him in the balls or anything.
I love how she looks back at them like all surprised.
You know, I got
and there was location shooting in Turkey for this film.
I was disappointed when in the famous The World Is Not Enough, which was with Christmas Jones, Denise Richards. It took place in Istanbul, and there was no reference to I've been here before.
Ah. It should have been.
I guess. Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't have to. But
I think Bond's been everywhere before.
Well, it's a different,
yeah, it's really
different.
Bond.
It's very blasé.
Yeah, but...
It's a different Bond. Maybe that Bond hadn't been
there. When then we get into the whole... okay, of course, we're into logic at that point. I guess it should go out the window.
I read Bianchi, that's her last name, right? This actress, I think?
Yeah.
Her driver on this film got into an accident when she was going to set... And they had to delay her scenes for 2 weeks because there are bruises on her face.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's a terrible story. Really. And
the joys of production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a tough film to
Beyonce?
Make.
Beyonce?
This was a tough
Beyonce, film. Yes, Beyonce.
How is this a tough film to make?
Production-wise, I think they had some problems along the way.
Like car accidents.
Like in Venice?
Oh, well, Terrence Young, who directed it, was in a helicopter crash on this film with the DP and someone else. Mm-hmm. And it sunk 40 feet into the water. He survived. Everyone swam out and got to set for the day shooting in the same day.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Terrence Young could have been killed on this film, but he wasn't. I guess he lived
and
twice.
And he had a job to do. Yes. But did he only live twice?
That's a later movie. It's interesting. They just mentioned Smersh, and there's Smersh and there's Spectre, and I think there was some explanation of it, but I think that Smersh is actually the Russian, like, counterintelligence or something like that, and that Spectre is extra-national, and that's what Blofeld is running, is Spectre.
And that's what the Flint movies took and did spoofs on, was Spectre and
that
Smersh.
And Matt Helm.
Matt Helm. And
all those.
I
love those
movies.
Yeah, those are great.
And I think there were, didn't Rod Taylor try and...
The Liquidator.
The Liquidator.
Yeah, The Liquidator.
Awesome. Yeah.
I don't know it's a good Liquidator.
Trevor Howard and Rod Taylor.
You're going to have to mention that to me when we're done.
If there was the really weird ones, like Dr. Something and the Go-Go Girls or something like that.
Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine with Vincent Price or something, I forget. And the Bikini Bombs or the...
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that's where they had the brassieres with the guns that came out of them.
Oh, yeah.
That Mike Myers took,
from Austin Powers. Yeah, I think it came from that. But that all came from the James Bond series. No one had done anything like this. And now they had a sequel.
Would you say, Serge, that what I had alluded to earlier, that From Russia with Love, the film is known as staying as true to an Ian Fleming novel more than most of the other films.
I don't know if I've read that, but I know in the past when I've watched it, I felt that it was, I liked that it was less gadgety. It was, you know, Dr. No was good up and I thought was really kind of like, I don't want to say natural, but kind of real up until the end with the big Ken Adam set. I like Ken Adam, but it would kind of seem to come out of nowhere. Here, there's no Ken Adam, or at least that we Ken Adam type of set.
Mm-hmm.
He may have done
pulling
it.
Focus. The story is the thing, and the
right.
The narrative.
Well,
elements of it.
It seems realer as opposed to Dr. No at the end. It seemed like it went into another realm.
Well, the most of the feedback I've read from fans, big diehards, have said that Dr. No, From Rush with Love is their favorite because it sticks as close to a Bond
right.
flavor of a Bond.
And here's where we hear the
novel.
Theme, the Matt Munro theme on a little radio as a gondola
yep.
goes by.
And Matt Munro is actually my favorite male pop singer of the 60s.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was awesome. Incredible tone.
Actually, if you go onto YouTube, you can find different versions in different languages of this song.
Of the cover?
Interesting.
Yeah, and you can do that for actually different Bond songs. But yeah,
YouTube is the most amazing archive.
who
left their phone on?
He just cannot be left alone. That wasn't me this time. Is that a Bentley?
Wow.
That's a nice
car.
That
is a beautiful car.
What else?
Hey, look who it is.
Moneypenny is back. I can only imagine watching this in the theater going like, yeah, I get, you know, the familiarity. You're seeing all the things, you know, that you'd experienced and enjoyed in Dr. No before.
I wonder what the average percentage of people who had seen Dr. No who were watching this film when it came out.
I'm pretty sure it was pretty high.
I would imagine so.
And then more people would have seen it now. And actually, being that it was at the time, probably what they would have done is they would have run Dr. No in second run. So they would have brought it back out for release and then shown this. And so now we're 20 minutes in. There's M. And we finally get, you know, the mission, so to speak.
Right.
So we've had all the obstacles set up for us. Bernard Lee is so cool. He was really good as M.
Yes, he was.
And look who's there.
And there he is.
There he is. Yeah.
Desmond Llewellyn. Who plays Moneypenny again? What's her name? Lois?
I'm blanking. Sorry.
I know.
She's
Canadian.
Usually know her name. But
she Canadian?
She was Canadian. Well, she passed away. Yeah, she was Canadian.
Aww.
Recently.
Well, she was
just a few years ago.
Yeah, very recently.
Canadian hero.
We pride ourselves on our Canadianship. What do you want?
Like a national treasure?
Yeah.
Was she a national treasure?
No, but we knew that. Yeah, she's Canadian. Sure.
Huh. You seem very nonchalant.
That's the way it goes. Like in Goldfinger, when Goldfinger's playing cards at the beginning, the guy he's playing, he's a Canadian actor. It was pretty well known at the time.
That's not Moneypenny. Moneypenny was huge. She was huge. She was an icon.
You were saying, Tim? No.
Oh.
I know she was. She was from Canada.
That's how they say it. It's like Norlands.
Yeah. I like how they set up all the exposition just really well. And we just like take it. It all just goes down like a vanilla milkshake.
That sounds good.
It does.
Let's pause this and go get one.
It does sound good.
You know, we're introduced to the Lecter. We're introduced to the girl. We see that. He has his mission, and we get to have M. Brow beat Bond.
So the girl is a cipher? She decodes, or what's her
I think
job?
She knows how to work the machine.
She knows how to work the machine. Okay.
It's important. You got to know how to work the machine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that a safe behind him? It is.
Yes.
And this is our first appearance of Q, correct?
Yes, but he doesn't have a name in this film.
Correct. And he does get pissed at Bond in this scene. So he's off and running in his report.
Right.
When I was a kid, they sold this type of briefcase, obviously not like this, but the James Bond briefcase in the stores.
Well, this is a major gadget fest.
Oh, yeah. and I think he uses everything in it. And of course, we're set up that we expect him to use everything in it. That is cool,
right? So when he
the gun all in the one hilt, so you can put it all together.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gold Sovereigns. I thought they
there
were Krugerrands, but
well, it'll work. So does he use every? He uses every gadget that's mentioned right now, right?
I think so.
I mean, you have to. Oh, that's right. You can't set it up and not use it.
I'm a newbie.
Exactly.
You've seen it only in parts.
Yes.
Wait, does this mean can I ruin the ending for you?
Sure.
Okay. I think you can guess what the ending is.
Yeah, I pretty much know it's going to go to formula.
James Bond lives.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure every single thing that he mentions now
comes into play.
And that's the brilliant thing. It's like, here's the wonderful
gadget.
So we
don't have to waste time at the time when we really need it.
Exactly.
For him to use it.
And we get to enjoy him showing it to us.
Follow through. Yeah,
and this is like I think one of the earlier best examples of this kind of thing. But obviously, they got the formula down, and they worked at each film. Now, going back to what I said before about all the Spectre people, we saw all of them training. So now we had all their training, and this is all we get from Bond.
That's all the training he needs. He doesn't need that.
We see he gets the briefcase, and he's got the girl, and
he has
the Bentley.
2 minutes of training.
Exactly. So basically, it's him against an army is what we're set up psychologically, because he goes out alone. Robert, whatever his name is, Donald Grant.
Lois Maxwell,
very good. Someone should write some fan fiction about James Bond and Moneypenny.
Backstory. There needs to be a backstory.
Some good fanfic.
I don't know. What we need is some meaty story about Moneypenny and her other life.
There you go.
Oh, nah. She leads a very ordinary, top secret life.
So you think.
And what does he write?
From Russia.
No, he wrote With Love, and then he put From Russia on top. It's like Bond, James Bond.
And there's our theme.
There we go. He's off and running.
It's the Monty Norman theme, right, Tim?
Legally, yes.
Legally,
historically,
yes.
Maybe
legally.
Not.
That's a nice shot of a plane landing, by the way. Very nice. Oh, it's Pan Am. I think they're doing a TV series, or there's a pilot for a TV series where Pan Am's going to be the airline set in the 60s.
The biggest Pan Am plug I always remember is 2001.
Oh, that was a biggie. And I remember flying Pan Am in 2001.
You flew Pan Am?
No, I didn't.
They weren't around in 2001.
Of course, they went out of business in the 80s? Yeah. After DREG.
And that was all a very subtle, if you notice, that was all a very subtle sort of password exchange there.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good visual storytelling right here, because you just have his look, and then you had Robert Shaw in the mirror.
And a gorgeous car.
And then this guy.
And that guy.
Yes. The reflector pumped on him. Look at that.
Yeah. And once again, we don't know who's who, but we had this a bit in Dr. No, actually. Same type of thing. He comes out, get picked up at the airport. You don't know who to trust. I'm sorry, Kieran Bay is his buddy from way back when. He's like his Lando Calrissian.
Ooh.
Are they going to fight and then say, yeah, we're buddies?
You know, the good thing about shooting in Istanbul is it's very scenic.
Locations really make these movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's like he knows he's being tailed.
I mean, really, what location has yet to be used in a Bond film that would be as striking? They pretty much run out.
Well, they haven't done...
Globally.
I mean, not a lot in South America.
I mean, Asia was covered and you only lived twice.
Yeah.
All the major themes of cultures pretty much have been covered.
That's true.
It's interesting that this is Istanbul, because this reminds me of, they never did this actually in the Bond films, but of Vienna after the war. It's still the same type of thing where you know that there's a lot of spying going on. Like you just said, yeah, it's the Bulgarians today. They're following us. Mm-hmm. Because, it's like post-war Vienna.
How did he get ahead of them?
No, he didn't. He just went off to the side.
Mm.
I always like the door hidden behind the curtain.
The secret door.
That's right.
Oh, my.
Oh, well. We guess we know what happened there.
He's fixing the bed.
Look at how wonderful he is. Look at how wonderful he is.
That's right. That was subtle.
Yeah.
Dancing around the censors.
I guess it was subtle in the 60s.
Still a bit more subtle than Pussy Galore.
Anything would be subtle next to that.
I love how Connery pronounces her name in the movie, too. He's just got a way of saying it. It's just
the S's have the sh in there.
Yeah, a little bit of that, too. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. Everyone's a son.
That's right.
It's interesting. We don't see this kind of character.
He's wonderful.
I don't think we see this kind of character again in the Bond films. Because because Bond basically comes to Istanbul and meets this guy, and they do kind of work together, though he's not core to the story. He helps with Bond accomplishing what he has to. But from now on, here on out, Bond is usually, it's just him, and then there's a girl, and that's about it.
You have a few of these kinds of guys.
Felix Leiter.
Well, Felix is a little different. Felix is different. A sort of his counterpart
in the
CIA.
Right.
He reminds me of Sulla.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Of Sulla.
Exactly. Exactly. Someone who's definitely instrumental, who knows how to get around town, get you what you need.
Yeah, you have a few of these guys. I can't think of others specifically, but
they're
I know
wonderful
there's at least a
character.
More,
I mean, Sulla's the same way. I just love Sulla. I mean, yeah. I love that character.
Well, it's a good structure to have because it gives you other characters. Oh, someone's in trouble. I'm surprised he didn't kill him.
Don't think I want to be that guy.
No.
No. With that big Band-Aid on his mouth.
Uh-oh.
A lot of uses of the Bond theme.
Yeah. But it's very effective. I never find it intrusive.
Not in a Bond film.
No.
If I were watching Angel's Ashes, I'd...
It does seem to kind of break.
Seems to
stick. Sophie's Choice or something.
Yeah, it would be very disconcerting. But that'd be just me. That'd be
the fountain.
This theme could be used in anything, and I would be fine with it.
Howard the Duck?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. I could totally see it.
What kind of furniture is in there?
Looks like a little girl's...
I think I guess
playroom.
It's like old worldish, though.
The tiles, right, on the...
They're still going
bottom,
with that
that's
theme.
It's very Istanbul looking.
It's a little exciting.
As I said,
it?
The theme is.
It's still going through.
You think it would be a climax to a film?
So it like yeah. would be kind of lets
it's
you
just
know
screaming,
that
this
the scene.
This is Bond. He's James Bond.
I think it's letting you know that the scene isn't quite done. He still has something else to do in the scene.
Well, it's the most exciting use of a Bond theme
well, here,
in this type of see, scene that Barry ever did.
See, they're bringing it up slightly, and then of course he finds the mic.
So. Well, I also think it's because the theme was so successful from Dr. No, and the audience probably ate it up. It was what they wanted when they came to see From Rush with Love, and they're more than giving it to them.
More cowbell.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Well
but,
said.
But they'd want to use it, you know, in the right context in a scene, so.
You're right. This music could be anything. I'm picturing Schindler's List with this music.
Oh,
it just
worked.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Gadget. We should have a gadget count.
Okay, gadget one.
No, I was like more than. If you count the briefcase, you're up to like
two.
10 by now.
Well, if you count every piece of the briefcase.
And the briefcase, yeah.
Like, they definitely wanted him in that room so they could bug him.
So I got a question.
Go ahead.
I got a question here.
Yes.
Bond to me seems to be so much a sort of Cold War mythical hero. Is he still a viable mythic, you know, persona post Cold War?
Well, in what context? In context of watching this movie, and how relevant can we relate to it, or in terms of taking the character and now making movies with him?
In terms of currently making movies, is he still viable as a character in this the current era?
I think the box office receipts of Casino Royale would answer that with Daniel Craig.
Something I'm noticing about...
I think it's less effective, but I still think it rides on its history very much. Yeah, that's not good.
In looking at the vehicles, yes. I'm noticing that we're seeing a lot of the sort of widely broad-faced 1960s vehicles in the background, but the ones that we're following are that sort of tapered front end. And I'm wondering if they're using a different sort of a vehicle that's easy to spot on purpose.
Likely. It's interesting that now, the plot is a little more complicated than the usual ones, because now what they're trying to do is they're trying to set up one country against another and basically want to stir things up so they can flush out, I guess, Bond.
This film does strike me as one of the more meatier plots.
Well, I think it's more sophisticated in terms of what it means, what the whole spy business is, because then it starts getting into, Bond versus Goldfinger.
You really have to pay attention.
Bond versus... Thunderball. I mean, it's all about, we're going to destroy this. We're going to... Here it's really pretty simple. They've got the machine, and it's all about... It has to do with Cold War dealings. It's like, Spy Who Came In From the Cold. All, about the ins and outs of being a spy. And that's why I think this character, Bay character, works better in this film. I'm trying to think of an analog in another film.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to do something.
Back to the salt mines. Well, that's nothing subtle there.
Yeah, really. The dude's got to do his duty.
This is 1963,
hilarious.
Right?
This is.
63?
And this is not Bond either. Ooh, there's... they just tried to kill him.
Somebody just... Oh, because he was supposed to be sitting at his desk?
Yes, and she basically just saved his life.
There you go.
By wanting some more nookie. And you see, that's the interesting thing. That was why we saw it before. It was a plant. So that way, when we saw it here, it wasn't just isolated. We know that it's been a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a nice plant before, and this was the payoff. That's good writing.
By the way, I'm a big fan of the Terry Gilliam school of a wall just suddenly blows up. Anytime you have a movie and a wall just suddenly blows up,
it's all good.
Yeah.
And now he talks about how there's a breach of the truce. So clearly, Spectre is trying to mix things up. Which makes it really interesting. There's a book by Hammett called Red Harvest.
Every single one of these blankets has a door behind
it. That's how it works.
What about Red Harvest?
Red Harvest takes place. It's about the operative, and he goes to, you never know his name, and he goes to some small town up in some small city up in upstate New York or everything, where there's two big gangs and everyone's basically trying to take over the town. So he sets the two gangs up against each other. So basically he gets them to kill. They made a few movies from them, most recently Dead Man Walking. Last Man Standing, the Bruce Willis one.
Goes back to Yojimbo, though. That's originally Akira Kurosawa.
Hammett wrote this back in the 30s or 40s.
Oh, is that what Yojimbo was based on then?
I've never seen Yojimbo.
I always thought of that as Yojimbo was the original of that line of... interesting.
No. Hammett's... I was getting into it. It's actually... He writes... I really like his writing. So... Now, definitely, I'd say now, this is paced differently than films would be made now, but for then, this worked.
Yeah, when I was a kid, this was probably my least favorite of the movies because, as a kid, I wanted the,
payoffs.
Well, yeah. I would agree with you, too.
It so strong. Strongly.
I agree. For a long time, I didn't really care for this, and then in rewatching them, I felt, the others have spectacle, and that's definitely what they have. The End of Dr. No was spectacle.
Yeah, definitely.
Goldfinger was, practically all spectacle. But it did it really well.
Goldfinger had a great narrative sort of structure to it, though. It was the way it kind of moved. I always thought it was... As I grew older, that was one that always remained a favorite.
No denying Goldfinger's a good film. But this, I think is really quite entertaining. It's probably one of the more, as you said, Tim, more faithful to the books and to the flavor of what it was like.
I can definitely see that.
I like how they go under the city and they're spying on the Russians.
With a periscope.
But that's the great thing, is everyone's spying on everyone, but everyone knows that everyone's spying on everyone.
Yeah.
How do you get a periscope not to be seen?
It's very, very tiny and pops up by the... Maybe it's in a mouse hole?
That's a reasonable point.
If there you go.
It would be funny to see the room and see this huge metal thing in the center of the room.
You just don't notice.
That would have been a Mike Myers gag.
That's
in there
it. Austin Powers written all over it.
Oh, so you see, now they don't know that Spectre's involved. They think...
The Russians.
They think it's the Russians or the Bulgarians in association with Bulgarians. Yeah, so, once again, it's trying to, they're trying to set each, you know...
Yeah.
Everyone against each other. Break the truce, so to speak.
Well, it's good to have a hobby.
So, at this table, are we unified in saying Sean Connery is our favorite Bond?
Oh, absolutely.
Actor?
For my part, yes.
I like a lot. I like each Bond for different reasons. But I love Sean Connery.
That's the weakest answer I've ever heard. Who's your favorite Bond?
Answer there is.
I really do. I actually like Roger Moore's. I mean, he was goofy and not nearly as macho and strong and formidable as Connery. I think Daniel Craig is awesome. So far, I'm really loving him as Bond. I also like Pierce Brosnan because he was a little, I don't know, diminutive. He's not a big guy and not, again, formidable, but he seems to sort of straddle that line between Connery and Moore pretty well.
And you know, Ringo's contribution was equal to that of John Apollo. It really was.
If they could not have done it without him.
Serge?
The Beatles without Ringo is not the Beatles. I'm
That's
sorry.
Right, exactly.
Do you want to chime in, Serge?
Sean Connery is my
favorite. After seeing the tongue lashing I just got, do you really want to chime in? Because you didn't pop right up and say
sorry,
Connery
I'm
the best.
Bring it, baby.
Sean Connery is just, I have passion feelings about Sean Connery as the Bond.
Yeah, but now how are you liking Daniel Craig?
Mixed feelings. I like the kind of this sort of brutality he brings to it, and this it sort of
raw,
yeah, it's sort of raw energy. Yeah. But it misses the self deprecation that I love so much in even many of the other Bonds.
That's even Connery. Did
it's,
have
I mean,
some
it's like
that.
Completely lost in the Daniel Craig character.
Yeah. And,
that's true.
I find that a big missing element. Yeah.
As far as Daniel Craig personifies, just this revenge machine, this gorilla, this force of, you know, nature just plowing through. But Sean Connery to me is all the layers. He's got, you know, everything. He can pour on the charm. He's got the physicality. He's got the humor. He's got the cojones. everything.
He's suave. He
can do every layer.
He's a little more refined. Daniel Craig, I'm like, yeah, he's okay. Is he James Bond to me? I'm like, he's a James Bond. He is not James Bond. Pierce Brosnan, you're all going to hate me. Did nothing for me.
Pierce Brosnan was the exact opposite of Daniel Craig. He was all suave and no physicality in the way that Daniel Craig brings.
I never felt any danger. I mean, he's effective. I mean, he's fine, but I just didn't feel the danger. Like when you think
you could kick Pierce Brosnan's ass. That's the problem. You can't think that you can kick Bond's ass. Otherwise, he's not as effective.
Well, you know, I mean, I like Sean Connery. I also liked early Roger Moore. I liked him Live and Let Die.
I like
Man with the Golden Gun. I didn't really care for, and Spy Love Me. He was fine, and then after that, I just kind of started losing it. But I did like Roger Moore in that sense. Timothy Dalton, I thought, was the most amazing Bond there ever was, ever on the planet. Timothy Dalton, great.
I would actually like to have seen him do more movies. But...
Okay, you clearly don't know when I'm being sarcastic.
No, Timothy Dalton actually was the first one to do
a
dark Bond. He was a dark, brooding Bond.
But
and
I would
Daniel
like to
Craig
see him
built
more.
Off of that, actually.
Well, in all fairness...
Timothy Dalton came before Daniel Craig and being the first one to play Bond dark.
In all fairness to Timothy Dalton, he just had...
I just don't think it
was the right production around him. To do what he could do for his type of Bond.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton was the flattest of the Bond.
Timothy Dalton needed a Bond film like From Russia with Love.
Yeah, I can see
that's
that.
A kind of or for your eyes only.
And it's strange for me because I didn't like him as a kid, but then as I grew older and saw him in other films, I'm a huge
He's a very good actor. And that's why it's the film that was around him that didn't really work. Rocketeer.
No, not thinking of Rocketeer. early film with I think his father's Henry the Second or something.
Lion in Winter.
Lion in Winter.
That was his first film.
Oh, he was in that. I didn't realize. That was his first
film. And he is equal to any of the actors in that movie. You know, he holds his own. So
he definitely has a stage background.
They are holding this shot an awful long time. Yes.
And no one's mentioned George Lazenby. So
well, there is George Lazenby, and he was okay. You know,
I think he would have grown into the part well.
He would have, but he. So, it's not.
Unfortunately, it was a one shot deal.
It's not the way it happened. I just like the local natural flavor of this whole thing. You know, it's like people. It's not gadgets. It's not spectacle.
John Barry was sent to Turkey to absorb the culture for his score.
Cat fight.
And the only instruments he used were like finger cymbals, as it turned out, because he said all their instruments lent itself too easily to comedy.
Right.
So he didn't want to use it for the film.
And that's why he's John Barry.
That's right.
Because he could discern that and go, wow.
I think this is interesting that they include this in the structure of this. I mean, we know what happens next, but I just think it's interesting they have this, other than just having a girl fight on screen. But
uh-oh. This is my first Bond film to watch after John Barry passed away.
Oh, wow. Hey, you know, they're going for it, man. They're going to do it. Kitty got claws.
They're amazingly beautiful women.
It's an interesting thing with these films that, you know, there's not a whole lot of other films where you can think of where there's so many sort of two-dimensional cartoonish elements to it, but that still it doesn't matter. It all sort of fits in with the...
What makes you say this is two-dimensional?
Well, just...
No, I mean, I was saying this is out of character usually. I mean, for a James Bond film, which kind of goes through.
No, I don't mean... I mean, like, the characters are all... You know, the stuff that Mike Myers picks out and would grab and use. And I don't mean specifically this moment, but that...
This is such an interesting moment.
That's the thing. They're spending an awful lot of time on that.
Yeah, gratuitous, actually, just to watch these babes roll around.
I don't know. I mean,
could
of course,
have been trimmed.
It was to lead into this, because, of course, now I think it's the Russians or the Bulgarians coming to attack the gypsies.
That's a Russian gentleman.
But that's kind of my point, is it's all part of the fun of Bond, is that you take in all these things, and it's like your suspension of disbelief. You take it up a notch for Bond films, because it's all
because you're being
fun.
So entertained.
Yeah, exactly.
The entertainment payoff more than covers liberties taken in... Realism.
Well, I mean, I guess the point I'm trying to get at is the reason this whole gypsy thing is there, well, other than moving part of the plot along, is they're all being manipulated like pieces on a chessboard, which was the illusion at the beginning of the film, is this whole thing that Bond can actually, I guess, go, you know, is comfortable in different cultures and accepting how different cultures do different things. And this is definitely in Turkish gypsies and how they settle something like, if there's a disagreement, you know, two men love a man, so this is how they handle it. And he's comfortable moving into that world. How many characters do you know who can do that?
True.
And I think that's part of that writing is, I guess, what I'm trying to get at.
This cut that we're hearing of music is the first time the alternate James Bond theme was ever used.
Huh.
In the James Bond films.
It's
written by John Barry.
Right.
I forget what he calls it, but it is John Barry's take on the James Bond theme. It's usually used in lighter moments when Bond's doing something.
I think it might be called 007.
I think it is 007, yeah.
Yes.
So this is the first time it was used.
And we're seeing James Bond, of course, shoot a lot of people. And now we have the whole thing is Robert Shaw's Donald Grant is watching all this.
So he saved his life.
He just saved his life. Yep. That's just...
Oh, he wants to be able to be the one to take care of him.
Well, he wants the plot to thicken. And if James Bond is dead, then they can't accomplish what they need, which is to...
Get the Russians and the...
The whole thing with the Lecter machine.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, it's all about playing the spy. This one's about spy games, this film. That's what it is. than any of the other ones. It's always about someone wanting to take over the world. This is all about the spy right. games and much mm-hmm. subtler.
Right. Which is a refreshing take.
And they never went back to it.
I've really never seen For Your Eyes Only. Is that brought down to pared down as well?
It's a little on the pared down side, but doesn't have as much to do with spy games. Oh. I mean, of course, the 60s, that's what it all was about. Spy games. See, now we get the whole culture thing continuing. You know what this reminds me of? A Ben-Hur, you know? Not Ben-Hur, Ten Commandments, when Moses meets the sheik, it is Ben-Hur.
When he meets
Hugh Griffith, right, with the horses.
Hugh Griffith, the horses.
That's right, and he's, you know, he takes him in. It's like, I'll show you how to do everything. Oh, we should do Ben-Hur sometime. Carve out 4 hours of our lives.
It's a goodie.
I ain't kidding.
Coming out on Blu-ray soon, I hope.
Ooh, nice.
Come on, Warners, get it together.
Yep. It used to belong to MGM. Oh, well. What? Holy.
Little threesome in
what just happened?
Insinuation
Did
there?
We just dissolve away from... Oh, my God.
Menage a dissolve.
Menage a dissolve. There is a new term. I like it.
Yeah, and...
and the afterglow.
Oh, the 60s. Oh, yeah. Wow.
She's good with her mouth.
Ugh.
Well, earlier when we first arrived at the gypsy camp, the other girl ripped the cork out of the bottle with her teeth.
See? Now that's some kind of woman.
That's right.
Who can rip a cork out with her teeth.
This is where the girls are waving, bye, James.
So this
Call
is,
us.
So this has become...
Yep, there we go.
Yeah,
cue the heartbroken girls.
We'll see you later.
Bob Hope, Anita Ekberg. What's the name of the movie in the background? Call Me Bwa.
Call Me Bwana.
Bwana.
Call Me Bwana. I always found this scene pretty interesting. It's pretty cold. But, and this is where we get to see the rifle.
Where did he pull that
he had
gun stock out of?
But he had the gun stock in his jacket pocket. And he pulled it out, and now he's able to put the rifle together.
What kind of jacket pocket is this? I guess it must be another.
This is James. He gets his stuff tailored. Come on, look.
Bob Hope, Anita Ekberg.
And I think
call me Buona.
I think the dude comes. The dude comes out of her mouth.
The dude comes out of her mouth.
Yeah.
Call me Buona too was really a letdown.
It wasn't nearly
pretty
as
anticlimactic.
Good.
The Revenge of Chang.
Exactly.
I like how he slipped on the slide-on silencer.
Oh, I like this. I think they're his sons also. Okay, that's right.
That's awesome.
See, he's got lots of sons. And this is how it works. I just really found this all interesting. It was just all much more spy game-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so he even says she has a lovely mouth, that Anita. Ooh.
I love how all the Bond films have these moments. It's almost like borderline vulgar at times. You know, they just...
What do you mean?
Well, in terms of the sexuality and that sort of thing.
Oh, the sexuality,
for the time,
yes.
You know. That,
for the
that,
time it was coy, way, yes.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. I mean, the whole thing is that we're being shown basically the events in a plot that we know, knowing what's going on, is all basically false, and they're all being manipulated, and just how much emphasis there is on it. And so by having that, we're actually allowed to see how these characters behave and not knowing that the plot is not really what the plot is.
Beginning of the quips.
She should have kept
her beginning of the quips, right?
That's right.
The Cavalier toss-offs.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there has been one before.
Is that a team? The Cavalier toss-offs?
No.
Hey, look. He takes his shoes off.
So now structurally, the film kind of grinds to a tiny bit of a halt right now because we have no idea where it's going next.
You mean we've taken care of that and...
Right, the whole thing with Bay has been taken care of. Someone made an attempt on his life. Bond, well, actually, Bond is no further in finding out what he needs to find out, but...
Now...
But this is... So then this is... Okay, now I remember. Yeah, I know what happens next. I like the green figs yogurt. What? Coffee? Because who's lying in his bed but the rest of the film?
Now, is he up in the bridal suite now? Yeah, he changed rooms.
I guess.
I hate that shirt.
Wow, that's hot. That came out immediately scalding. It did. The steam just came shot out when he turned the knob.
It's Turkey. It's Istanbul.
They got lots of hot water
yeah.
there.
Well, yeah, that explains it.
Yeah, it's right. The plumbing's a little off.
It's got to be like a dry ice gag or something to happen that quickly. To read so well for camera.
Yeah.
You guys like Sean Connery so much because he's hairy?
What?
Curious.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Yeah. I don't know. Look at
I like him because he's hairy.
That
Whoa.
Was a lot for 1965.
That was a lot. I've never noticed that before.
That.
I don't remember that either.
This is why it was a 14-year-old movie.
There you go. And you know what I love? She's wearing a choker.
You love this.
And that's it.
That's all you need.
That's it.
Learn something new every
day. Looks like she had a problem with that chair, though.
And that's your fetishistic moment with Serge Delpierre.
No.
That's right. Chokers. Ladies, chokers only.
She could be wearing nothing and said she's wearing one thing and he can see it and it's around her neck. That's the point. We're seeing it because they want us to see it. That's my point. Look at that.
Sorry, Serge. I like chokers too.
My point is it's intentional. Is that
it's really a ribbon more than a choker.
Well, but it and essentially, clothing-wise, it's a choker.
I guess. Oh, hello?
Wow. So the whole thing with the mouth.
What is going on here?
They had Anita Ekberg and they had this. So maybe the whole Anita Ekberg thing was a setup for this. That's wow. That's clever filmmaking.
There's a little person in her mouth. Is that what you're saying?
That's
can
what.
Can climb out on a rope?
Something like that. And you see, now we're going to the decoding machine. So we're at about the halfway mark.
I'd say he's at the beginning mark right now.
Well, he's in the middle all the time. I like how they set up this is going to be a nice little travelogue, the Sans Souci Mosque, so we can see it, of course.
Right.
Oh, what is it with the scar again? That's interesting.
Did they ever mention that scar in any other movie?
No, but it was planted, obviously, at the beginning, so that when she says it, we know about it, and it's not introduced for the first time. Once again, good writing.
My.
Oh, boy. Now this, I'm assuming that in the 60s, this was relatively...
Pretty risque.
Risque, but like a different thing to have, you know, the spy who gets all the chicks. Because, I mean, definitely this was a thing.
A little voyeuristic touch there, too.
Oh, he knows it, too. It's Istanbul. There's spies everywhere. Oh, there's the guy that was following him at the beginning of the film.
Boy, they get their money's worth out of that building.
Yeah, they are.
In the background.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
You got to know where you are.
Constantinople.
That's right. And I like the fact that out on location rather than sound stages, they could have gone that route as far as production. But they decided to go the extra mile and actually... go on location for the flavor in these films.
For the exteriors.
But, I mean, the Bond films were famous for taking you around the world.
Yeah,
and showing
which
you
is what I'm saying is
well
the cut above. That's why I love them,
absolutely.
Rather than let's do everything soundstage, which could have very well been the case.
Yeah.
That's true.
Until you get into the layer and then you get the quasi-futuristic outfits.
That's right.
Oh, don't even talk about Moonraker to me.
No Moonraker bashing. Now, come on, it has its merits.
The classy futuristic outfits are in many movies. Oh. They're always good. I love all those outfits.
And Jaws is a good guy, and it has a cute little blonde Swiss girl with her pigtails.
Oh, yeah. They run away
come
together.
Come on. Yeah, now we're talking.
Killing me.
He has a toast, and he clinks the glasses. Well, here's to us. And that's Richard Kiel's only words that he ever uttered.
Sean Connery is my favorite Bond, but I love all the Bond films. I wouldn't... I don't think I'd badmouth
him. Oh, okay, so I'm weak and what?
Well, maybe not some of the more... I don't even know if I've followed all the more recent ones.
Did you see Quantum of Solace?
I did. Well, the most recent ones. I did see that. I've seen the Daniel Craig ones, but the one, like the two before that.
Die Another Day?
You didn't miss much at all.
Dude, you have to see Die Another Day. No, it is really so don't. Bad. It's not as bad as Moonraker, but
bad. When I saw Die Another Day, I said, that's Moonraker's the nail in the coffin for me. I'm done. Mm.
Because it worked the formula and worked the formula and worked the formula, but the formula was done.
Talk about cartoon. It was, couldn't even.
But it didn't have any kids
suspension of disbelief.
But that's my problem with Moonraker is Moonraker became all cartoon for me. It's just it took everything that came before it and just, I mean.
But
and
his
I
tongue
the
was
book.
In its cheek.
But that's
the tongue
that's
wasn't
cartoon.
In the cheek on Die Another Day. Yeah, they're trying to be serious with it. Moonraker's tongue was planted firmly in its cheek.
Yeah, but I don't go to.
And that's what there's. I think Roger Moore needed to be that Bond to pull off. That
oh my
kind
God!
Of
can you imagine right. the movie that it would have been with any of the other Bonds?
You know, it was like on this outing, we're going to just play it light, and it's going to be a souffle. It'll be fluffy, and then we'll move on to other. You know, which I'm sure you say has no place in a Bond.
Thank
film.
You.
So,
thank
yes,
you.
I said it for you.
Thank you. Thank you. For me, it's just like Bond. Oh, God. Bond's not souffle. Bond is steak.
But eating steak every
he's
time.
He's filet mignon. Oh, yeah. Chateaubriand.
Words to the wise.
So now we're kind of. We're getting information. And we're moving forward slowly. But he basically and Donald Grant have not had a confrontation. It's interesting. Basically, Donald Grant is the enemy, and he has not faced the enemy yet, and we're an hour in. And he doesn't even know that he's the enemy.
It's all the building blocks. The movie is in the building blocks. It shows that how this really wouldn't go over today because of the spectacle and stimulus and... It's all about, you know, how you're getting to where you're going, not that you're there yet.
Right. So. It is definitely paced differently. I mean, there is, yeah.
The intrigue is in, you know, the characters going about getting to where they want to go.
And maybe, yeah, that's what it is we're so used to Bond film being structured differently than this.
No, I don't find this jarring in any way, though. I mean, this formula seems to work really well to me. I don't mind the fact that we haven't seen the bad guy and that it's all a mystery and that he's looking for him.
I don't mind
it. Film.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind it. It's just interesting. And remember, this is, I mean, in a way, they were finding their footing to what would become the established formula.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I think they hit their stride with.
Goldfinger.
Goldfinger, yeah.
And in all honesty, the formula, for all the value the formula
Bond
has, I also think it's Achilles' heel. I mean, I really do.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
I mean, any formula can
so
be.
It's so formulaic in some of the films that it's just like.
It's a matter of giving the people what they want, and so you do that every time, and it becomes like a comfortable old pair of pajamas.
And that's what Die Another Day was. It did the formula as much as it could, but there was no
wore
more life.
Welcome.
There was no more life in it. There was no more creativity. Well, there was some, but it was just.
And they had to reboot.
They had to reboot. They had to just change
it.
So that's
fine. Could you take that story?
Which one?
Die Another Day. And
do we have to?
And fix it in a different formula and make it work. Or, you know, could you, you know, I guess that would be the
but
only way to
this goes back to Michael's question at the beginning. Is Bond, the Bond character a relevant character these days? And a relevant character?
Without the Cold War.
Without the Cold War. And I mean, in this...
This is the quintessential Bond Cold War film. This is all about Cold War.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
100. It's not about fancy. It's not about
Look
some kind of. It's not about science, because if you notice about everything else about that, it has to do with some kind of scientific thing. You know, Dr. No is about, I guess, whatever, atomic power. Yeah. Goldfinger is about blowing up. It is, once again, it's about technology.
And this is all about advantage in war.
Right, exactly. This is all about tactics and in a bigger war. Maneuvers. I can't even think. Live and Let Die, maybe. I don't know. I remember what he's trying to do. Yeah, I mean, it is on a smaller scale. He's trying to move drugs and doing this and doing Mr. Big.
Yeah.
And so maybe that kind of went in that direction, which I have to watch it again to see if it still works.
That one seemed, you're right. I mean, the drug one was sort of crime-centric to get, but the ultimate goal was to get money for something.
Right. And I don't remember how James Bond came into it. But yeah, but otherwise, it usually is around military or science.
I think my argument at this point would be that maybe Bond is just sort of a holdover at this point, that you know that characters like James Bond, like Sherlock Holmes and these kinds of heroes are a reflection of the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. And I can't really make a strong argument that James Bond is a reflection of the zeitgeist at this time.
No, I think you're right. I can't disagree with
Sherlock Holmes is a good example, because Sherlock Holmes was good for a while and then kind of disappeared. Now they have brought him back in a way, but kind of retooled him in, because they're able to recast him like a modern hero. And in a way, James Bond hasn't had a break for it, but they have found ways to make him a modern hero of a sort, more brutal, more thuggish, more...
You're talking Daniel Craig now.
Daniel Craig, more doing something at all costs to save ourselves or this or that, or being moral or amoral.
Yeah, and they're approaching more of that sort of thing, but it's still retooling the holdover. It's almost like there needs to be a new mythic hero out of this.
Part
of the problem, I think, is that we don't really feel that threat of a global meltdown. We don't have the Russia, U.S., everyone will be destroyed in one fell swoop danger. We have now, you know, small terrorist attacks and, you know, small events that we need to watch out for. And so, you know, is the James Bond character the guy to handle that?
An interesting way to look at this, actually, is part of the problem with the Timothy Dalton versions is, I think Timothy Dalton did it right after the wall fell, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like early 90s. And
late 80s,
early 90s. But already Perestroika was around. And the second one, which it wasn't Living Daylights, it was, License to Kill. They did the South America thing with Robert Davi as some drug kingpin. And it just did not work.
Right.
It just didn't. There was no why, you know, the why.
Yeah, why would this character be involved in this story?
Right, but they had the character.
Jerry Gunn's school of things blow up, walls blow up.
But I like how he's like, I know exactly what's going on, and this is what we're doing. It's our plan.
Jerry Gilliam.
And
walls blow up.
Yes.
Grab the drawers.
My other favorite thing is the Ridley Scott school of floaty things, but we'll talk about that at another time.
This is the 007 theme.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this is the 007 theme, which we heard during in the Gypsy Camp.
To finish your thought, though, what you're saying, Serge?
What was I talking about?
Before the walls blew up.
Before I distracted you, I apologize.
Thanks, Michael. We're talking about Timothy Dalton.
View to a Kill.
Timothy Dalton and the Cold War.
Well, the point is, if the general, I guess the zeitgeist allows for that, these kind of things, and for that character to do what he's going to do, then it allows it. But the Timothy Dalton example is a good example of their James Bond became irrelevant, and then they had to retool him, and only by bringing in Pierce Brosnan and then saying, okay, now the wall has fallen and how do we deal with the aftermath and all this kind of thing, they were able to at least get some life out of it. And then eventually, by the time, you know, Die Another Day came around, which was post 9/11, you know, even the world is not enough is not all that good. It's about chasing, you know, basically a Rupert Murdoch type person.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
media.
Big deal. Media. Oh, because media is so evil. I mean, it's a different kind of story. It just was like, eh. So then they went with Casino Royale to, what is it even, the story for Casino Royale? Le Chiffre, I guess. Well, what they've done is they've created like a world conspiracy type of thing, a shadowy thing like Spectre, but we don't know, and these things are happening, and it's like the manipulation of people, but it's not Cold War. It's more of a global conspiracy type of thing, and that's what they're hanging the Daniel Craig thing, at least storyline on. Mm. Which you can, I think, people can accept now as at least a thread. There is no Cold War anymore, anything like that.
And now I want to know, all the instances that Terry Gilliam blew up walls.
Well, I'm mainly thinking of Brazil, but
Time Bandits.
But yeah, you had some in Time Bandits. You had some. Brazil was the big one,
well,
but
yeah.
You do have moments in other movies where that sort of thing happens.
The hidden anarchists.
We just had a nice little tour of Istanbul there.
And you want to talk about the Ridley Scott School of floaty things? I have multiple examples.
Floaty things. I know as far as reflective things.
Ridley Scott.
Float. Oh, you mean in the air?
Yeah.
Like in...
Fog.
Richard Harris, what was that? Gladiator.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The battle and all the...
If you, if you think of Legend, that was the big one. That there's like every moment in the movie.
Atmosphere. It's just thick.
We maybe...
Yeah. Well, smoke. You know, it's basically...
Eye candy. Eye candy.
You basically have a... As it's we like to call them on the set.
So anytime I see that in a movie, I call it the Ridley Scott School of floaty things.
Well, but it helps to give texture to the air.
I love it.
Peter Hyams actually used smoke a lot, too.
Oh, it's not even the smoke. It's that he'll like have flower petals that are constantly
fluttering. Oh, that. Okay, you're right. Thanks.
Legend. Legend had a bunch of floaty things.
You know what? Okay, guys, I've never seen Legend.
That's an awesome movie.
Okay, I'm just telling you. Letting you know.
And now we're coming up to
We've ruined the floaty things for you if you see
I don't care. What do I care? So...
We're on the Orient Express, right? This is the Orient Express.
This is the Orient Express, and so now they've stolen the lector, quote unquote, that they were allowed to steal.
Now, how did they? And they've completely disregarded the fact they just saw the Russian security agent. Like, oh yeah, he wouldn't have jumped onto the train seeing me. And how did Robert get on the train earlier?
Because he's planned the whole thing. They don't even know that he's manipulating the whole thing so that he can.
Manipulated them onto the train?
He's manipulated everything. Basically, Spectre's behind this whole thing. Everything that they've done, they've been manipulated into doing. Once again, his sons are going to be waiting. That was interesting. Person passing through. Oh, well.
And now we're coming up to the iconic fight between Robert Shaw and Sean Connery, which is a benchmark of, you know, fight sequences in the Bond films.
Now, wait, who directed this?
Terrence Young.
But Peter Hall edited, right?
Peter Hunt edited.
I'm sorry. Peter Hall's
and
a director. My apologies.
He went out of his way to really... cut these sequences with a fine, you know, with a razor as far as just precision. And the editing is very startling for the time.
Oh, like in terms of its
in
pace?
In the fight sequences, yes.
Okay.
Cut, you know, the amount of coverage and what he did to cut it.
Right. Richard Maybaum actually
very stimulus oriented.
Well, and Richard Maybaum there for
Richard, yeah, and actually Richard Maybaum who passed away last year. Hmm. What? Daniela Bianchi? Mm-mm. Watch out. Be careful. He's not going to be careful.
I love trains in movies.
Yeah. Actually, have you ever seen The Murder on the Orient Express?
Yes.
It's been a while, but yes.
Yeah.
North by Northwest uses...
I was about to say North by... There's great scenes,
well, the
great dialogue, and all kinds of stuff.
The train going into the tunnels, the infamous...
And Silver Streak. Let's not forget Silver Streak.
I don't get that, Tim. What does that mean?
Yes. I think it's a metaphor for something.
Metaphor for what?
I don't know.
What's that Christmas one?
I don't get what you're talking about.
Tom Hanks did.
What?
The Christmas
one. It was on a train?
Yeah.
Oh, Polar Express?
I haven't seen that.
Well, what about Runaway Train?
Did you work on that?
I haven't seen that one either.
Traded.
You never saw that?
Traded? Oh, wait, which one are you talking about?
Runaway Train is with Eric Roberts.
Runaway Train is a really
good film.
Runaway Train is a really good film.
About that recent movie.
It's a pretty awesome movie.
Oh, Unstoppable.
Yeah.
With Captain Kirk and Denzel Washington.
That's right.
I just watched Emperor of the North with Ernest Borgnine and Lee Marvin. That's a really good train movie.
Uh-oh, this guy's going to get it now. I'm predicting it. I'm predicting.
I'm going to go with Silver Streak as my favorite.
Favorite train movie?
You know, I've seen that once in the theaters.
The Great Train Robbery. Sean Connery.
I never saw that.
That was Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton directed it.
Yeah, wrote and directed it.
Wrote and directed it, yeah.
And wrote the book, too.
Donald Sutherland.
I have the book.
Interesting how many, you know, train movies with Sean Connery you can name. I did my part. Someone else has to say
the contract.
Next one.
It's Zardoz has trains.
Zardoz has trains, right.
Excellent.
The Untouchables has, well, they're in a train station.
I think you're reaching.
You got that going for you. Uh-oh. Good. I can't get over how big he looks.
Well, they use a lot of low angles on him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, here's our sequence coming up.
Yeah. And well, she's adorable.
Basically, his job is to get, you know, get the Lecter for Spectre. Get it?
The Spectre Lecter?
Well, because the Lecter was with the Russians. And Spectre is trying to steal the Lecter for Spectre. I'm not even trying to be funny here.
Well, that sounds funny.
Well, I mean, now, ooh, what
bit? Sounds like a Danny Kaye bit.
The vessel with the pestle, yes. Is the brew that is true.
Right.
I used to know the whole thing. Okay, now I think something just happened because they dissolved.
They always did. You get a
well, they
were, cut away.
They were gonna. She was gonna take
sexual dissolve.
She took the strap off of her shoulder and walked off.
And now
camera.
They're smoking.
Well, she's smoking.
Enough said.
How many times have there been dissolves in this movie? What's going on here?
He's getting a lot of dissolving action.
Quote, unquote. There was the gypsy threesome. Mm. There was this. There was her that's right in the hotel. There was at the beginning. Then there was Hakim. Is it Hakim? No, I can't remember his name. Now, that's interesting.
I thought this fight took place at night.
That's a nice little plant. It does take place at night. But okay. That was a nice plant with the shade, because that's going to come into play later.
Mm-hmm. Plants and payoffs. That's what this whole movie is about, apparently.
But that's what good film writing is about, that.
But she's with the bad guys, right?
She's with the... Yes, she is. She's with the Russians, and she's with the Spectre, yes.
That's undercurrent.
Suddenly, my entire...
No, she's not with Spectre.
She doesn't think she's with Spectre.
She's with the Russians, right. Rosa Klebb is a Russian, but she doesn't know...
That she's also with Spectre.
She's with Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But I think she does know who Donald Grant is. And if she does know, later she doesn't care. Because she's charmed by James Bond. It's a subtlety I haven't kept track of this time.
Mrs. James Bond.
Oh, we're getting the theme for From Russia with Love here. Uh-oh. Something's wrong. Oh, Karim B.
Wow. One track mind. I must have my tea.
See, now he's serious. Actually, it's up until now, everything's been subtle. He's been in action at the gypsy camp. And then also with the assassination, but now we get to see him in business. And he's by himself. And James Bond says, not likely.
Why will it be difficult? Who's going to talk?
Yeah, really. He says, I will try.
How'd he die? Sorry.
Cancer.
Asphyxiation.
I'm going to take his yellow tube.
Well, he's been, I mean, consider it. I mean, he's been Bond's right-hand man for...
Oh, this is very impactful. Yes.
About the last... At least an hour.
You get attached in an hour.
Well, our time, and that's one of his sons right there. And he's like, the train's not stopping. This can't be good. This really isn't good.
He said something about a telephone.
Telephone. I like the old cars.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I speak their language.
Do you?
Psych.
Oh, he
dramatic
is.
Dramatic entry.
He is not happy, and he's like, this is you.
I don't think that's the first dramatic entry he's had with her.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay, there
Whoa.
You go. She's a spy. That's, I'd say that would be the only excuse, is just because she's a spy like he is.
Well, isn't
that's what I've always said. That's the only time I ever hit a woman is when she's a spy.
Well,
Sean Connery's famous quote to Barbara Walters in an interview when she called him on it, and she said, "Have you hit a woman in real life?" And he says, "I only hit them when they deserve it." He said that to her in an interview.
Right. Well, that was famous. That was in the 80s. Yeah.
That was not something that he was undoubtedly happy about having said.
Probably not.
But if he had said, only when they're spies, it's surprising how many spies he's met.
Evil spies. Well, only if they're evil spies.
I'm just saying, if he thinks he's, you know.
It's a lot of pollution.
I mean, if he's a spy and she's a spy and he thinks that she's going to do something that's A, going to try and kill him, or it's going to probably kill him. I mean, I don't know.
But I mean, what if he's just like an out of work actor?
No, that's not acceptable.
And she's a spy.
That's
she must be, because I swear to God, I mean,
okay.
A
so
lot
we're talking about fictional
spies.
Situations here that none of us are ever in.
I am.
This is why we go to the movies.
I mean, I know a lot of spy
never mind.
Women.
Never mind.
And they need beaten. You should see the look I'm getting. I'm playing.
Thank
I'm
you.
Playing.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you think that he should have been polite with her? Said, "I'm sorry, you're not going to tell me what I need to know."
Did he get the information he needed to know?
He did, unfortunately. I mean, I guess the analog to that, Jim, is if you did that scene now, obviously it would play differently.
The hitting of the woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even think you'd have that situation now. But if you did an analog, you've tried to shoot that now. Obviously, that wouldn't work. It would not be acceptable to do something like that.
Interesting that it would not be acceptable to show it, because certainly there are people who do it.
No, I think he'd probably punch her. He wouldn't slap her. Or she'd punch him. Flip it around. If he'd done something to her, would she punch him to get information?
That's a good question.
Well, that's the whole thing. It gets down the whole, if you're a spy, what do you do?
Yeah.
In the context of what this
or
is.
Or you just inject them with something.
Well, you can inject them, but then you're still committing violence. That's the whole thing. It's the whole violence thing. Actually, this has been very interesting how they had the camera go back and now they went back that way.
Why are blonde people so evil?
Because they are.
Christopher Walken was blonde in View to a Kill.
He was a great villain in that.
He was.
Script did not.
It's
the movie
not
was.
Blonde,
was un,
it's like
it was
platinum
un,
blonde, isn't it?
It is yes. Kind of. You see a lot, like even Shaw in this movie is.
I mean, it makes you wonder how much time do villains spend on their hair.
I think he just gets it cut short.
Do you think he's naturally a platinum blonde?
I didn't ask him. Sarah, they're in Zagreb. So they're going like through Yugoslavia.
Are you sure it's Zagreb?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the sign staring at us in the face. That was a really good move that they actually managed to stop everything with Zagreb right there. How many times did they have to do that?
The train hit its mark. It was a tracking shot.
Uh-oh.
Does he know the secret code?
Well, but this is where it gets interesting.
Is he do? Oh, he's not doing the secret. Oh,
lots of great location stuff.
No, what
okay,
he's
now,
he's
you notice how Robert Shaw threw the cigarette away. Apparently, all the secret passwords have to do with smoking.
Thing, apparently.
And they're going into the See, that's the problem when you don't know someone is tailing you. They impersonate you.
And he's looking back at the body?
And they kill the other person. Yeah, that's what he did. He killed him. And basically, he's assuming his identity. And that's how he's going to get the lector. That's the plan. So he's got the briefcase. I like how this is all played out without dialogue. I mean, they have the dialogue.
You've heard it the first time, so we don't need to hear it this time.
Yeah.
First two times, actually.
They're pumping a lot of light on those people. Look at that. Look at her.
Yeah. She's, like, she's really fire. Hot.
With the film stocks at this time.
Oh, yeah. You need a light. Lot of light.
My gosh. Yeah, look at Robert Shaw. When you have those really hard shadows. Wow, that's when you know. Okay, favorite Bond woman, Bond girl.
That's tough.
Oh, my God. I like the Gypsy Twins.
Not just in this film, but ever.
Yeah, I know.
You like the Gypsy Twins. Okay.
I like them all.
If you have, if you had to call it, who would it be?
I'd have to think about that. That's like picking a favorite Hitchcock.
Sarah's favorite Bond girl? In any of the Bond films, the one that stands out the most, for whatever reason?
Not Pussy Galore, but...
Thinking.
What's her name?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with the first one.
Holly Goodhead?
Ursula Andress.
Ursula Andress.
Honey Rider?
Yeah.
Really? Ursula Andress?
No, that's Michael.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Ursula.
I'm going to go with just...
I'm thinking.
So the beach scene is... The Works iconic for moment for yeah. the Bond girl for you.
The Voodoo Princess.
Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour is pretty up there.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that. I was thinking of Jill St. John also in Diamonds Are Forever.
She was good.
Really? Jill St. John?
Jill St. John, yeah.
But I love Denise Richards. She's pretty goofy. And I don't like her character, but I just think she's amazing.
Wow.
She was amazing in Wild Things, and that's about it.
Just looking at her.
She's
a treat.
And in Starship Troopers.
And Starship Troopers.
Well, everything's great in Starship Troopers. It is.
So true.
I'm going to say Diana Rigg on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh, damn it, you're right.
Well, Diana Rigg, you know what's funny? You guys mentioned Mrs. Bond. Rigg, and I didn't actually realize that was Mrs. Bond. I love Diana Rigg. Adore her, and I didn't actually even remember that she was in one of the Bond movies. That she was married to him.
I don't know. I think in the early ones, like Shirley Eaton was good in Goldfinger. In Thunderball, I don't remember her name. But even the villainess was good. I don't remember her name either.
Villainess?
Yes.
This is a question, though, that obviously is intended to be such a big question because
very subjective.
All the movies have such great women in them. Mm. Halle Berry.
True, but the women always have, you know, their roles are always
such
so...
a treat.
But the thing is, the women's roles are always... You know, How do I say this right?
Thin?
Written in sort of a male fantasy standpoint?
Thank you. That's exactly.
Written by 13-year-old prepubescent boys?
Exactly. Written as just being, you know, basically almost a sex object just for James Bond to...
Almost. Delicious sex objects is what they are.
Well, but that's all they are. And I think, obviously, Die Another Day took a stab at changing that. You know, they actually had the Bond girl being someone who's a spy herself and can do her own shit and blow shit up and kill people. And
well, Michelle Yeoh was really good in GoldenEye.
Okay, well then they were working towards that too. Yes,
was it GoldenEye?
It was GoldenEye. You're right.
It was GoldenEye?
No.
It was the one after GoldenEye.
World is not enough.
Yeah, I think it was World is not enough.
And that's
sorry.
Wasn't that with Denise Richards too?
No. Was it?
Am I confusing them?
No, World is not enough was
they get a little muddy
Denise
there
Richards
towards the end of the
yeah. I think it's both of them.
Okay.
Oh, I don't even care.
No.
Oh, I don't even know.
No.
It doesn't make a difference.
Because then there was
World
also
is not enough.
Sophie Marceau
is the gal of Lois and Clark and Desperate Housewives. Terry Hatcher, who I thought was very, very blah.
Oh,
with Michelle Yeoh. That was that movie.
Okay, and then there was Denise Richards and Sophie Marceau. How many Bonds did Pierce Brosnan do? Four? Three?
I think maybe four.
Was GoldenEye. What else? I like that. I like how what he's doing. I mean, how they've also blocked this, where he's holding the gun to his head while he's stripping his pockets, and we're all from this point of view. He's not taking any chances with Bond. Ha ha. That's funny. Red wine with fish. Good move.
I like the plate photography in the background. Good shot.
Oh, yeah. It holds up. Like he says, it's Smursh.
It's just good exposure day for night, I think.
Oh, that is, yeah. And then this is where finally Bond realizes it's not Smursh, it's Spectre. And now it all comes together. We're at basically 1.5 hours. It
Revelation.
Now basically puts it all together.
Dun, dun, dun.
And now we're essentially coming out of the second act, and now we're going to third act.
So we have to explain everything before we're killed so the audience learns everything, basically, rather than just shooting Bond.
He says it. See, they make it a character thing to see, you know, for him to, like, play with him before he kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think after you've done it 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, the speechifying gets a little old. Connery is great.
I mean, he of the sort of self-deprecating, but I mean that's why he's so good as Bond, is he has that.
To me, he's the epitome. He's it.
Yeah,
for Bond.
Well, that's what made him so successful. He was so damn good and cool at it. And this is right, and this is where he finds that the levels of it. See, she was just working for Smursh, for the Russians. She doesn't know that there's Spectre in this. Now, come on, stop talking. No, but let's take it into this perspective. You mean he's basically laying out the fact that there is, essentially, going back to the global conspiracy thing, that there is, you know, you all think there is the Cold War. Ha, there's even something, we're an organization even beyond that. And I think it's interesting that they bring this up as a plot device, essentially, for these films, which we didn't really know about in Doctor No. But this is where they're starting to roll it out. that basically the, you know, the Cold War is not enough for these guys to be against each other. There is actually something even deeper to manipulate it all. So in a way, that is the fantastic element. Spectre is, I'll grant it that. It's still an interesting aspect to it, but it plays all with...
It's interesting that he's completely comfortable taking the pistol from the right hand to the left hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, did you notice when he...
No. Is that odd?
No. It's just, he's such a pro that it doesn't matter what hand he's shooting with.
When you shoot people, I would assume you have a hand that you favor.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But he's left. It's on his left. I didn't really think about it.
Talk about really building up to a fight sequence. Mm-hmm.
It's actually a really well written scene. It's like you don't even know where this is going to go.
It's good for tension.
This is great because he's saying, I'm going to shoot you once or third, but now he's just revealed his weakness. You know, he's not going to make him crawl and kiss his foot. So this guy, Grant, really has it out for Bond. He just really, really hates him. And that's the thing. Bond doesn't hate him. He's nothing to Bond. Mm. Bond would just as well kill him.
What I like is how written this is, rather than most other people and directors and writers would underwrite this and go straight to the fight.
Right.
This is a delicious setup.
Yep. And it's
nice duration.
Right.
Setup.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, Grant doesn't even think that maybe there's a booby trap in that. Well, obviously he's having him open it up.
Ooh, the clouds just dimmed.
Huh. Oh, were there two?
Oh, he brought in one.
Oh, that's right.
Because he stole it off the guy he killed.
And this is... I like the reflection of Shaw. And he opens one, and he opens the other. I don't remember... Bam. There we go. And the fight is on.
And here
yes,
we go.
Yes. Go, Peter Hunt.
Now watch the cutting in this.
Ooh. They changed the lighting. This is awesome. Yep. Well, and the choreography, too.
Ow.
It was well worked out. Wow. And now this is where him being a blonde plays crucially. You know how to tell who's who.
Even in these quick cuts, yeah.
Right.
You can follow the placement.
Yeah, exactly. Because if it was anything but, you wouldn't even know.
Blonde versus brunette.
Yeah. That was a good way to cover that was a stuntman.
Yeah, well, the only problem is it's a really bad wig they're putting the stuntman in. Or at least it looks bad.
Well, I don't know. I'm buying it. It's okay.
Okay, I'm just going to put this out there. Yes. Fighting in a sport coat would be really hard.
But if you're James Bond, you have a loose-fitting sport coat. So that, and now this basically calls back to the very first scene.
Beginning.
Yeah. Only thing is that James Bond has a briefcase with the knife. Where is it? I like how he's struggling for it.
With the knife.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, exactly. Ooh, man.
Weren't counting on that, were you, Blondie?
That's graphic for 63.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and now he just turned it around and strangled him. There you go. Yeah. Wow.
Good payoff.
He straightens his tie.
Let me just button this.
Oh, man.
So now he's got the film and the letter.
And the film was of the two of them having sex. That's right.
So now he'll have that forever?
No. Nope. As it keeps Actually, saying. He throws it in the water.
He does throw it in the water at the very end.
Oh,
the point.
Goodness.
Bye, Robert Shaw.
Well... Not quite.
Do we know that he's dead? He didn't seem to check him.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think so.
Choo-choo.
You might want to get the blood off your hand, buddy.
She's been drugged.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I don't know that I would want to park my little truck on the train tracks in the middle of the night.
Well, they know they'll stop, and it's part of the plan.
It's a beautiful new truck.
Man, I remember this. Hey, it's got flowers. It's a flower truck. Okay, no, Robert Shaw's character is dead. I'm confusing this with Live and Let Die. In Live and Let Die, he threw the guy out the window in the train. It was a train, remember?
Live and Let Die?
Live and Let Die, remember?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I remember a sequence where it's like strobed.
Yeah, the guy with the
frames are like intermittent. It's like someone's going out the window.
No, there was the guy with the claw. The claw, remember the hand that was missing and is essentially two hooks that went together. That's the guy is on the train.
That's Live and Let Die.
And Live and Let Die, he got it to clamp on to the part of the train. He flipped him over and basically the guy got separated from his fake arm. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ow.
That's for being friends with Grant.
That's right.
That'll teach you.
Yep. He just took his belt. Oh, he's tying his hands. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's interesting.
That guy's really flexible. It was just because his hands went back so easily.
Well.
Perhaps I'm not. Maybe that's my problem.
You can't put your hands behind your back?
Not very comfortably. I certainly couldn't whip them around like that guy did.
He's a flexible guy.
I have to admire a girl who gets comfy just sleeping on the dirt.
Little Miss Narcoleptic.
Oh, now she's going to sleep in flowers. Great. That's why they did it, to get that image of her sleeping in a bed of flowers. Yeah, there you go.
With all the colors. And
I can see Terrence Young going, let's have her be in a bed of flowers.
That's right. It's a flower truck.
Uh-oh. You know when they start with the helicopter shots, you know he's in trouble?
Because
there's probably a helicopter attached to the shot.
Yeah. Exactly.
So now this is Spectre, right? Yeah, this is the Spectre, not Smirsh.
Spectre flies around in a very discreet yellow helicopter.
Very discreet.
Now, Felix Leiter was in Dr. No, right? Correct?
Yeah, that's Jack Lord.
Right, okay. So it's interesting that Felix Leiter is not in this.
Yeah, they didn't bring back everything.
Yeah, they brought back. And so they brought him back for Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah.
Slow down. Okay, we'll slow you down.
Right. Okay, let's see. You have the Lecter, and we're going to try and grenade your truck. Uh-huh.
What does that mean?
Bombs on either side, I guess?
I guess that's what it means, yeah.
I think it worked.
Oh, man, that Fuller's Earth.
They're ruining the flowers.
That's not
Shoot
nice.
It down.
Interesting. If you look at the design, the truck is yellow and the helicopter is yellow.
It's true.
They're both cowards.
I don't know. But look at that. What does that mean?
Must mean something. Not really sure why Bond is running. It's like, I want to get to a nice high point where I can shoot at you.
He wants... Come on, put the gun together really quickly.
No kidding.
Quit running.
At this time, we really hadn't had many helicopter chases in film.
In North by Northwest, there was a plane.
Crop duster.
Helicopter. But not helicopter.
This is probably one of the first helicopter chases.
This is very reminiscent of the North by Northwest.
I'm not really sure. Why are they not shooting at him? It's like, oh, let's just keep buzzing him with the chopper.
Because maybe they want him to fall and hurt himself.
Why is he not putting the gun together?
Yeah, I agree with you, Jim.
They milked it. You know, they just stretched it out.
They're sadists. They're part of Spectre.
This is not two gypsy girls fighting. We don't need to see. We don't need to milk this scene.
Uh-oh. Now we have music and they're standing stationary. Oh, and he's got the grenade and shoot the grenade.
I don't think he'll release the grenade. He's going to stay in the helicopter.
I hate when that happens. That was a good shot.
And so this was a model, you said.
Mm-hmm. Radio-controlled model.
Put the ball on your head.
Yeah, that's a little clumsy there. But we got the idea. I mean, I think they were definitely stretching their
Did you see two people in that shot?
Well, yeah, she's in it.
No. The shot before that, when he's running down, it looked like there was another person running up the hill.
Oh, maybe a crew member got caught.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd say they were stretching their muscles in terms of what they could do with the story structure and the action sequences. Which, once again, this is kind of a bridge to Goldfinger. I'm kind of bored.
You know,
I'm just being honest.
As far as setting a formula, this is getting it there. They haven't locked it in, but they are getting their ground.
This is the last half hour. I'm expecting like it to be going, and
it's still more just people going places, trying to do their things.
Which is why I love Goldfinger so much, because I think it is. I mean, Goldfinger's a long movie, too.
Right,
and I think it still works.
But it's well-paced. Yes. There they got it nailed out. But they've got a lot of things down here, and this is more of a languid thing, and it's got its climaxes, and then now we're into this.
This is different from the novel, this boat scenario.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think this is in the novel.
Okay.
They did this to open up the film and cinematic-wise.
Right. Oh man! No, they sped that up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, buddy, at least you didn't have your hands tied behind your back.
Pistol?
Huh.
Why are you getting the pistol out, girl?
The flare gun comes in very handy.
Yeah,
it does. Always do.
This is why. And we get to see, there's the fuel. That's very important.
Yeah, because on a little boat like that, you want to have like 6 barrels of fuel. Yeah.
So now we're back to 200 to gallons. Blofeld.
Number one. Not to be confused with Robert Wagner, who's number two.
Okay, so here's... Oh, you see, now he planned the whole... They had the chess player plan the whole thing.
Mm.
And he didn't count on Bond.
Is that an octopusy ring on his finger?
It does look like
one. Oh, is it?
It's a little octopusy.
I think it's an octopus ring. That's interesting. I never noticed that.
General Gogo, right? Wasn't it like General... The guy in the...
General Gogo
or Gogol?
Gogol.
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 Go.
Uh-oh.
Here comes the shoe.
And this is the first time we've seen the shoe. We haven't seen it till now.
Wonderful scar.
Right.
Oh, what a heel.
That's not even funny.
Oh, sorry.
See, I don't think that's smart. I mean, you have people who are smart and they fail once and that's it. You get rid of them. I mean, they're geniuses and you're going to waste that kind of talent because like you're going to find someone like that. Ugh. Oh, okay. They were trying to bribe the Russians to get the Lecter back. Oh, because that's what they're about. Spectre's all about money.
What's that?
What? Testing the wind.
Testing the wind when you're moving forward. The wind's coming from one direction.
But she looks pretty, don't she?
Yeah, when she puts her finger in her mouth.
Right, so she can do whatever she wants.
She's doing her exercises.
Oh, Gogol got there pretty quickly.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, no kidding.
unless they were on a ship of some sort. Who knows? So now we got our boat chase, which nice. we haven't Live and Let Die also.
I like that it's not rear screen. I mean, this is
You know what? Yes, I am in total agreement.
I know they're going to cheat and throw some rear screen shots in there, I'm sure, but overall it's real, which is nice.
Yeah.
This is why they did this, to open it up cinematically.
Yeah. Now, see, there could be music now. I could deal with it.
He saved it. I'm sure it'll kick in at some point.
Well, it's like Dr. No. Dr. No was kind of spare on the music, too. How about Fire at Will? I'm going to wait for you to tell me.
Hey, when you say things like you're firing too close, it sort of takes the danger out. Oh, well,
uh-oh.
Things just went very south.
That could be problematic.
Yeah,
and that didn't explode?
Well, it needs a spark. It just punctured it.
Bullets going into barrels of fuel?
Liquid doesn't explode. Liquid fuel doesn't explode.
Right.
Really?
No, it's the gas. Once you empty some of the fuel out, the fumes remaining will explode. So maybe in the end, it's okay.
Hmm.
Huh. Yeah, just shut up and do it.
Yeah.
Come on.
Do what he says.
Give me the gun. Don't argue.
Put your finger back in your mouth.
Wow, that's cool.
And that was because all the fuel had spilled out of them into the water.
Right.
There's our music.
Is that what they say?
Poor Robert Shaw. He always dies. He always dies before the barrel explodes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Ah. There was an injury in this sequence.
I can imagine.
Got really
this
burned.
Is pretty. Yeah.
We did not see any green screen or any back rear projection chase.
There's
fabulous.
No rear projection in any of this.
Kudos to them for that.
This is all stunt guys. Yeah, if your boat's on fire, jump. That's a miniature.
Yeah.
Oh, Gogol dies. Wow.
Well, he burns. I don't know if he dies.
Yeah, so they mixed some miniatures in there.
Interesting how his wool coat caught fire.
Wool doesn't burn?
Not very readily.
It was too hot. It was very hot.
Must have been.
Yes. Just when you think you've gotten away.
Lotta?
This is Lotta. And now it's important because the girl still thinks that she works for the Russians.
Yes.
She doesn't know that she works for Spectre.
I'll just leave that open.
That's right. That weird-looking typewriter. And leave you in the room alone with it.
Just take it and run.
Didn't she have red hair before?
She's in disguise.
Okay. Just checking. She's pretty cool. It's too bad that she... You know,
too bad she's evil.
I'd say as a good character. Yeah, she's confused. She's like, I think I'll just slip out. Damn it, I can't get away. Of all the luck.
Yep.
My maid has an attitude.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, really. At the end of a... What kind of gun is that, Jim?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
A Makarov?
I don't know.
I mean, it would make sense that they'd put something like that in her hand.
Okay. You see, you know more than I do.
Some sort of Russian weapon.
Look at that wallpaper, man.
Pretty That's busy.
Serious wallpaper.
Okay, can I just tell you that we had wallpaper just like that in our dining room when I was growing up?
We all did.
And it was velvet.
Yeah, good old 60s and 70s. Hmm. How does he get out of this? I don't remember. This is interesting.
think she does it.
Oh, that's right. See, the girl, the Bond girl does help him.
Oh.
There was a wig. Okay, there you go. And now we had the setup, so we know what that is.
Watch out for the shoe.
I know. Whoa.
Oh, red hair. Shoot her.
Oh, and I guess the thing is, oh, will she shoot James or will she shoot her? Oh, that's good and dramatic.
So long. Awesome. Was that number 5 or number 3?
She's a theatrical.
That's actress. Number 3. Number three is dead.
Number 3.
That's number 3. So now number... Who's number 2? Oh, was the chess man number
Robert
2 or number
Wagner.
1? No, number 1's Blofeld. That's right.
Wait, Robert Wagner?
Her kicks.
And Austin Powers is number 2.
He's number 2.
Yeah.
And here's Matt Monro, and it is the song.
Okay, I stand corrected. I stand corrected.
Who's our singer?
Matt Monro.
Monro. Monro. M-U-N-R-O.
But in terms of the structure...
No, M-O-N...
M-U-N-R-O.
M-U-N-R-O.
Yeah. In terms of the structure of the films, they just had the Bond theme at the beginning, and this time they had the theme, but instrumental, and they changed that for Goldfinger, and that became the standard to have the vocal theme.
Ooh, that reminds me.
Oh, there's your rear projection. Is that Super 8?
Yeah. Can you imagine?
That's regular 8.
That's Super regular 8. But can you imagine trying to see the image on a regular 8 frame?
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Yeah, he thinks highly of himself.
Yeah, really. Oh, look at that. Now, this is interesting.
Moment.
They do this against a rear projection image.
Now, that's
odd. That's significant. It's a significant thing to end on. Anyway, not quite the end. Ha ha.
This is the first time that they list what the next one will be.
Right. We didn't have that before.
Yeah.
Goldfinger was next.
An Eon production.
Which stands
Everything or Nothing, which is James Bond's credo. Which is his family crest or something, is Everything or Nothing.
Is it ever mentioned in a film?
I think it's in On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Actually,
that'll be a Bond film title.
That'll be the last Bond film. The next Bond film title will be Everything or Nothing.
Should be.
It should be. If I was doing it. Oh, Boothroyd. See, Q's name is Boothroyd. Oh, I'm sorry, M-O-N-R-O. I stand corrected.
Monroe.
Matt Monroe. Not like Carolyn Munro, M-U-N-R-O.
Who was in For Your Eyes Only.
You know, it wouldn't be such a bad job to be, you know, on the...
Yes?
Going out and shooting B-roll for Bond films.
Yeah.
That's part of the deal. Let's make a Bond film and travel around the world.
Yeah, that wouldn't suck.
That is the deal.
Go, Matt.
Yeah.
Sing it, buddy. He was a bus driver. Never had a vocal lesson in his life.
And he sang.
Smoked like a chimney. And he had incredible
breath
control.
He had that voice. It just goes to show you. You
that
never know.
You just never, you know, sometimes it doesn't make a difference.
Smoking is good for your kids.
For some.
That's a Lowry restoration right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the next batch of Bond Blu-rays.
Don't look at me.
I'm not.
I'm not doing it. It's not me. It's not my fault, really.
From Russia with Love, 1963. 007 gun symbol logo, 1962. Danjak.
Yeah, so this was a year later after Dr. No. So they turned it around relatively quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
They must have had faith.
Yeah, so what'd you think?
Fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't, you know, I mean, it doesn't follow what becomes the Bond formula quite as closely.
Right.
But I actually really like the movie.
I like the first half better than the second half.
I think the formula is there. It's just fleshed out character-wise and plot-wise, but the framework is really there for the formula.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They're working out the kinks and how to do it.
I mean, they have
all
the, you know, main action part, then you come back and you have the tag at the end where Bond is either with the girl and says something cavalier, and you have the release, and it's fun, and the credits roll. I mean, the gun barrel, the basic structure is there for Bond films.
Right.
I was going to say, this is unusual, but this isn't the film. This is
the menu.
The DVD.
Right.
But yeah, I felt it was really, to me, it has, I've never read a novel. I've never read one of the Ian Fleming books cover to cover, but it feels like a novel to me reading, watching this film. It feels like a book.
It does feel, yeah, more, that it feels closer to that. The only book that I've read, I think, well, I remember reading is Moonraker. That's the one, which I enjoyed the book. This is why I had such a thing with the movie. I'm like, this is so...
Is it drastically different from the book?
It's kind of, I mean, the main idea about Drax is kind of the same, but everything else is just like completely different. You know, there's no space stuff whatsoever. It does have to do with rockets and technology and him stopping him and that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's good Bond stuff.
Does Jaws have a girlfriend in the book?
Jaws is not in the book.
What do you mean Jaws is not in the book?
Jaws is not even
this
in The Spy Who Loved Me.
This is a carryover from Spy Who Loved Me, but that's not from the book. Yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't, yeah, The Spy Who Loved Me actually was just a short story and has nothing to do with the movie per Ian Fleming's instructions. So
there's no shootout in space in the book of Moonraker between.
So, Mike, what did you think of this film? You like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I agree with you that and.
Harumph. Sorry, I'm, how many different ways can I deliver that?
I think the last third of the film does kind of drag in some ways compared to other films. But I think your complaint in some regards about the, you know, the supervillain, that's what the other films always build to that. And I think, you know, maybe that's kind of what's missing. So there's not that building to that big character with that
unveiling
over the top sort of
fortress.
Scenes, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, in terms of, well, let's, I don't know, let's talk briefly about this, but does Bond have an arc in this film?
I don't think Bond really ever has an arc. He's the kind of character that
really
other
constant.
Characters change around him. You know, he's of that ilk.
Okay, I felt he had an arc in Honor, Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
Because he starts out one way and then he turns a different way. And he wants to become married and he can lead the service. He resigns in Honor, Majesty's Secret Service. I think he has an arc, a change to his character the most in Honor, Majesty's Secret Service.
Anytime you have a series like this where you have a character and you give him an arc, though, you sort of endanger the series itself. Because
He has to stay the same. So basically,
well,
if he
most heroes if he, don't have much of an arc.
Yeah, they don't.
Right. So if he's... I mean, you have the person who does... The inadvertent hero, the person who doesn't want to become a hero, who becomes heroic, but for your typical sort of hero story... You know,
My point here is that, okay, so if he doesn't have an arc, then what carries us through the film, and how does this do it differently than, let's say, Goldfinger, I guess was my point, which we're definitely pointing to and saying, oh, yeah, that totally works. There's an arc. I mean, it's him defeating Goldfinger. Here, your point, Michael, is that the main villain was a small villain in a way. It was Donald Scott. And in a way, he got killed 15, 20 minutes before the film even ended. And then all that happened is that Bond got away. He escaped from Spectre and then, of course, had the last little clash with actually probably another representation of the villain, which is Rosa Klebb. But maybe that contributed to, I guess, the weaker feeling of what this was. It wasn't clear. In other words, what they set out to say, that Spectre is this Spectre-ish organization, played into kind of the lack of an always-present antagonist.
Yes.
And at once Donald Grant was killed, then it's like, well, we're going to get away. Oh, but then they've got more people coming after us. We don't know who they are. Oh, that's Gogol, and then that kind of thing.
They floated away on a boat, but without blowing up a layer beforehand. If you don't have a hideout to blow up, you can't just float away.
Well, they didn't ultimately defeat number one.
Exactly.
And there was no
indication.
So they
didn't deserve their boat ride.
They didn't deserve
their Cavalier
boat
ride.
You gotta blow something up before you have that.
Blow it up real good.
Exactly.
Right. And I mean, that structure may have existed. I don't know, existed before then.
Which
they
did
I think
knock it down. Then they blow up the
what?
Dr.
No.
Like it's a nuclear facility.
Yeah, they blow up his hideout. Yeah,
exactly.
And Goldfinger, they don't blow up the hideout,
island.
But they Goldfinger they blow up. No, they don't blow up anything. They stop
the
Goldfinger.
The, yeah.
Well. Goldfinger doesn't have a hideout, but he goes.
Well, they have the battle
through the
at
window.
Fort Knox.
It culminates.
They don't
in the
blow up
Fort Knox,
but they battle it.
Right.
Knox.
So if he had, because he
have a guy with a very tricky hat.
But he didn't. Okay, he didn't meet the enemy here until basically 90 minutes in. That was a thing. He did not actually confront them until 90, like whenever he saw Grant.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, the fight with Shaw there is kind of the.
Well, no, but he only met him once Grant took the place of the other guy.
Right, before that, he was
in
the background.
So he actually met the enemy. He didn't even know, and then it's only when he realized, oh, he's the enemy, and that's when he became the enemy. And that's the only time we had that interaction.
And at no point did Shaw ever, you know, put him on a conveyor belt with like a bandsaw and then like walk out of the room. You know, you got to have this kind of
for
moment.
The escape.
Or strapped to a chair with lasers. Or...
Well, right. And which is what you had in each of the successive.
Can I just get some sharks with friggin' lasers here?
What was that?
That's from one of Mike Myers' things.
Yeah, Mike Myers.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you maybe see it. Think of Deep Blue Sea. With Sam Jackson. Oh, it's
underrated
just
film.
Really?
Oh, okay. Underrated film.
Right. Now you're totally ragging me. Okay. Well, on that note, this has been... Well, I don't know. I mean, I'll give it a shot. I just remember seeing him like, what the hell is this?
So did you ask the question, what was the character arc of the... You know that, or the arc of this story?
We'll continue. What I was trying to get is that based on the fact that he has no arc, mm-hmm. then what are the things that you need to have constructed in the story to maintain it to the end? And as Michael pointed out, it's that the antagonist, the villain, kind of disappeared towards the end.
So
and it became diffuse, and there was no blowing up of the lair. So that's why maybe there was a feeling
typical
of,
Bond closure.
I'm talking in terms of being able to maintain story closure.
Well, that's not atypical of a series,
you know,
or a serial type storyline as opposed to a series.
It's like, you know, I was listening to Lawrence Fishburne on radio the other day talking about his character on CSI, and he says basically he just tries to be still because it's not about him, it's about the mystery. And in some ways, you know, obviously Bond's a character, but it's about the intrigue and everything going on around him, and Bond just kind of, you know, moves through it.
In a way, we use this term in acting, he's a vessel for action.
Yeah.
And in a way, we can pour ourselves into him. I mean, he still does act and does things that and he is an avatar in a sense that we can live through.
He can be cool.
He shoots people, and for us guys, he sleeps with the women.
The story is all about the situation. I mean, the film is about the situation that you put that avatar into.
Right.
And so, you know, and how will he survive? Will he maneuver that?
In a way, he was, you know, him being there in Istanbul at least helped. Actually, Kareem had a bit of an arc. Kareem Bey, his buddy. You know, he was able to avenge, you know, he was injured, mm-hmm. he was able to avenge, and then essentially Bond was the instrument.
Right.
He didn't change by it, you know, and Grant even had his arc because he was like, I'm going to get Bond. Bond's just like, I could care less about you. Yeah, I'm all about the mission.
Bond, in a nutshell, is the Cold War male fantasy to make us feel better about the fact that we can't do anything about the world potentially blowing itself up.
But that's what still makes him attractive today, because he is still, I don't want to say Cold War fantasy, but he is a warrior fantasy of the guy who can basically kick ass anytime. Yeah. And you know that he'll do it. It's like Bourne. It's like Jason Bourne. But I think worked in the first film. Second two films, I don't know.
Really? Oh, I thought I liked the Bourne series very much. He was good,
but the series, well, I don't know, that's a whole other thing. I think the series kind of was like stretching for like, well, how can we expand on this thesis that we have? And, you know, I don't know. I think two films were good. Third film just stretch it on. For me, stretch it way too far.
Hmm.
I was like, okay, I'm done. But that was... That's me.
But like the Bond films, the character is what I'm drawn to.
But that's the whole thing. He's the guy who can do anything.
Right.
I want to be like that guy. But he's like Han Solo. I don't know about you, but I mean, I loved Han Solo in Star Wars. He was the guy. He's the smuggler. He can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Roguish, but
a nice guy.
Saves
the day. Doesn't have to be on the front lines. Yeah. Gets the girl.
I mean, so to harken back to our earlier conversation.
Gets locked in carbonite. Yes.
To harken to our earlier conversation, now may not be a period of time in history for Bond, but maybe someone like the Bourne character is a little more...
Bond is like Jell-O. There's always room for it.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say now is a time for Bond. I think that's why the Daniel Craig version did work, and the direction that they started going in was good. It's just kind of finding the stories to make that work, because now we do want a guy who can kick anyone's ass, because we're, you know... Ostensibly, we're scared. The world is scary since 9/11. This and that, and then, you know, with what's going on with the economy and what's going on in the Middle East, who knows? Uncertainty, you know, mm-hmm. China. We just don't know what's going on. So we do want someone who will act
mm-hmm.
as an avatar.
Right.
Bourne was for that. But I mean, if you watch some of the more successful characters they put up there, and I'm sure with the next Bond, which is going to go in production, I think in a few months, you know, you're going to see that too.
Wonderful.
So. All right, so at some point later, we're going to do Goldfinger, right? We will return with Goldfinger.
Fantastic.
Some months from now, but not next week. For this week, for this commentary of Film Grok for Russia with Love, this has been...
Jim Usterman.
And...
Michael Smith.
And...
Tim McMillan.
And moi, Serge Dolpierre. See ya.